right from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
You know, we used to be the lunatic fringe. Now, compared to what's coming out of the White House these days, we're damn near mainstream. And, you know, we've talked about it over the years, and probably no more cogently and prolifically than the conversations we've had with Alan Watt as to what exactly is really going on here, that I thought probably a good time to have Alan back, because those of you who maybe heard him 3 years ago when we were talking might have still had some doubts as to what was really happening and why. But anymore, as you look around, you start to realize there's got to be a bigger picture here. And indeed there is. And somebody who knows all about it is Alan Watt. If you go to cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and I've got a link on Raleigh.net to the site if you don't remember it, but if you do, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you can see a plethora of information, and you can check out the Cutting Through the Matrix, the Cutting Through series, volume 1-3, Waiting for a Miracle, and a lot more. And I urge you to not only find out what's going on, and you will from Alan Watt, but also patronize the site, because clearly Alan doesn't have a big staff of people and a big income from this. So those of us who do believe probably behooves us to further that by making sure that Alan's eating, which he's doing very nicely these days. So in moments, in case you're still wondering what's going on, you will start to find out.
The Raleigh James Show.
But first I'll mention gold. And here's another thing. We've talked about gold over the years, and suddenly a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm not sure I want to go with housing. I know I don't want to go with the stock market. That's a fool's rally. The banks aren't looking too good, so maybe I should look at gold. And, you know, while I absolutely believe you should buy gold, I'll tell you, don't buy it whatsoever until you understand how it's sold. Because there's no shortage of people who will take you for the ride of your life financially while you're buying gold if you don't know what you're doing. You can't go in and say, I'll have 3 ounces of gold, please. You buy gold in a product. That's the way it's sold. The products are priced differently. They fall into one of two broad categories. They're either going to be bullion, meaning no matter what it looks like, you're just getting the melt value of the gold in terms of value. In terms of numismatic, those are the collectible products, and they're going to have some premiums. Sometimes that's appropriate, other times not. You know, it sounds like there's a lot to learn. There really isn't, but there's some fundamentals and basics you need to understand before you buy gold from anyone. I think the best place to start is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. This is Melody's site. You won't buy online. It's a great place to get information, though. Melody is a trader in precious metals. She's been executing trades for a decade and a half now. She knows her stuff, and believe me, she's seen it all. And one of the reasons this site is there is so that you'll know what you're doing before you buy from anybody. Read the frequently asked questions in the latest news and the newsletters and Melody's notes, and give her a call. 800-375-4188. No pressure to invest. She's not trying to sell you anything. 800-375-4188. After you have all your questions answered and you start to understand how gold trades, then look at everybody's offers. You'll know. At the point that it starts to make sense to you independently of the sales pitches you're getting, then it's time to buy gold. And when you're shopping around, I think you're coming back to Melody. Nobody beats her commission rate. That's the discount. Never a minimum order. So if you're just trying to buy one coin rather than $10,000 worth of product, that's no problem. Fastest shipping. And by the way, that's important too. With gold, you want to take possession of the metal. Don't ever buy it from somebody who's going to hold it for you. You take possession of that metal. And above all, customer service worth its weight in gold. Yeah, she has the experience base to know what she's doing and the integrity to tell you the truth. Discount gold on silvertrading.com. 800-375-4188, and you remember to tell her that Raleigh sent you. And once again, we welcome Alan Watt. Thanks for joining us, Alan.
It's a pleasure to be back again.
Now, you know, when we talked years ago, some people were thinking of it maybe in the abstract, and some of the things that you were saying perhaps were foreign to folks. Anymore, I think much of what you've been saying for decades now is fully coming home to roost. So where are we in the paradigm?
Pretty far on. Really, this has been a very old agenda to bring in a world society where a small elite would rule over the world and the rest would be sort of flattened down to some sort of strange equality at the bottom, equally miserable. And since 9/11 in 2001, we've seen every country go into action with this exact same totalitarian plans of surveillance over their own citizens, even into your paper mail, emails, everything, cameras everywhere, ID cards, all this kind of stuff, which tells us all that this was a plan which all governments had obviously agreed upon long before 9/11, because governments and bureaucracies don't act very quickly. Believe you me, it takes years to get things coordinated between them all and to work together. So they all went into action at the same time. And you have to go into academia to see what academia was teaching in the big universities, the well-known universities across the world for the last 30 years. They kept saying that this century, the 21st century, was to be the century for change. And that's where Obama's slogan came from. And, of course, most folk don't go into the big Ivy League universities to see what they're talking about. And it isn't until you really delve deeply, you're looking at the culmination of a very old plan. It started off with the League of Nations, and then it became the United Nations, a front group for a type, an embryo for a world government. And then we see this century of change where all of that now is to be implemented as the United States, and this is the key to it, the United States took over from Britain with agreement to do so, from Britain, to be the main taxpayer and funder and military supplier of troops and all the rest of it, to be the world's policeman, who would standardize the world into the same global system under a World Bank system, the IMF, the same so-called democracy-type systems that we all have. And it's no coincidence, for instance, that in 1990, the Soviet era just suddenly, overnight, came to an end because it was time to join the two systems together. And we're going into this new system. It's got a really fascist elite at the top who've always been there. Their history is actually written in Professor Carl Quigley's book, A Tragedy and Hope, and his other fantastic book, The Anglo-American Establishment. He was the historian for this group who manipulated geopolitics across the world for 100 years. And he fills in all the blank bits in history that you don't get in school. And he said this would be a type of feudal system they would bring in. Now, you tie that in with Eisenhower's speech on the industrial-military complex, where he told the people to beware of it. But you could add to that the industrial-military-political complex, because you're seeing the third one come out in the open now. A form of socialism is being used across the entire planet. Now, socialism was never a movement created by grassroots people at the bottom. Socialism was created on behalf of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, a so-called non-governmental organization, which is comprised of two main groups, the Cecil Rhodes Society for World Government and the Lord Alfred Milner Group, that is comprised of world bankers. And they also run the Fabian Society, the World Socialist Society. You're seeing it come into play as it was intended to do. They said it would take 100 years, and they were quite right. We're right on target. And they're bringing in a socialist system. Now, under socialism, it's a planned world society they're talking about. That's what it really all is all about. They believe that the experts should have control of all the world's resources and distribute them from a United Nations type of organization to the different, they don't call them countries anymore or states, they call them regions. We're all in blocks now. And that goes for food eventually as well, by the way. And when we look at what's happened even in the food industry, they've already taken over the world's energy supplies. Five companies really have taken over the world's energy supplies. Five companies have taken over the world's food supplies. And we're getting no actual choice now in what we even eat. It's all genetically modified, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, boy, is it. Boy, is
so
it.
So what you're seeing, and now, of course, they're out in the open in all mainstream newspapers, because another part, another plank of this World Socialist Society was a managed population. a depopulation, actually. And we've had cries from the Optimum Population Trust in Britain, with it's all lords and sirs who are on the board of it, like Mr. Ticknell, who's a Huxley, by the way, one of the Huxley families, and calling for a sterilization of people and so on, and the reduction of population by mandatory means. We've got a guy appointed as the science czar of the U.S., John Holdren. Now, John Holdren is now the official policy advisor for all science and techniques to be used in Obama's administration. He co-wrote with Paul Ehrlich back in 1977 the book called Ecoscience, where he talked about the need and how to do it, how they gradually have to do it, bring in to America and across Europe and so on, mandatory sterilization and forced abortion. When you see who's being put in charge of everything, the man who was put in charge of the Food and Drug Administration under Obama is Michael Taylor. Michael Taylor was the main lawyer for years for Monsanto, and then he was the main lobbyist for Monsanto. Monsanto is part of the military-industrial complex, because these are the same guys who gave you Agent Orange and other wonderful things, and now they're creating your food for you. I don't trust them at all. So Michael Taylor is right in from Monsanto, and he's now your food safety czar, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the guy who put the bovine growth hormones in the cattle in the U.S. And didn't let anybody check it out, independent inquiries or testing. He just passed it right through.
Right, and then so, the government on that penalized anybody who would dare claim their product was non-hormone, was hormone-free. So
that's correct. Yeah. That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, not only
so,
would
so
they.
So we're under, you're under really going under world socialism, the planned society, and I was waiting to see if the next part would take place, because back in the Club of Rome, the Club of Rome is another branch. All these think tanks, these big think tanks, are special branches of the same CFR, Royal Institute of International Affairs group. Margaret Thatcher called them the parallel governments, and she also called it the real government, mm-hmm. the world government. She says this parallel government is not responsible to the public. She says in democracy, there's too many conflicting parties. Therefore, they have to have this parallel government to get the job done without answering to the public. The Club of Rome, in their own book, The First Global Revolution, said the same thing, that democracy would have to go, mm-hmm. and that what they favored for the world society was a new form of collectivism, which technically is communism. And so under a mass of bureaucrats running every facet of your life, now look at the agencies you have set up. That all started off, like Lenin said they would in the West, as services,
mm-hmm.
like child care services and so on.
Sure.
You have all these services now interfering and getting power from governments, and even backed by SWAT teams at times, to come into people's homes and demand they live a certain way or do whatever it is. And you're being regulated. This is to be a world of strict regulation from birth to death. And eventually, with the hoopla now, and I guarantee it will come out in this present administration, you'll see the push now, not just for euthanasia, it's already started in Washington State in
sure.
the U.S. They just won a battle in Britain on the same thing. It's no accident that happens at the same time across the globe. But the next step will be to promote voluntary sterilization, and now that you already have the first teenagers coming in who've had years of this brainwashing in the Greenie movement, volunteering to have themselves sterilized to save the world, you're seeing the exact plan come into action, to fruition, that the Fabian Society mm-hmm. put out in their own manifesto an awful long time ago. If you look into our fantastic, probably the most open and more realistic behind-the-scenes documentary of the Soviet Union, the massive culling that went on in the inside the Soviet Union. It's called The Soviet Story. And the first part of it, it shows you George Bernard Shaw, a co-founder of the British Fabian Society, also the World Fabian Society, the World Socialist Party. The Mr. Blair and Mr. Brown now belongs to. They both are members of it. You'll hear Mr. Shaw saying, when we are in charge, says, you, all of you out there, will have to come to us and justify why we should let you live. Mm-hmm. Because your purpose, you see, is to serve the world state. That's the mandate of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. It's the mandate of the Fabian Society. It was the mandate, supposedly, of the Communist Manifesto, which was born in London by the same people, by the way.
Sure.
And so it's the same mandate, but we're going through the last vestiges of it. But the next phase was something I was waiting to see, because architects have been taught for the last maybe 10 years or so of the up-and-coming New World Society that they have to plan mm-hmm. and do all their drawings and buildings for. And they have been taught, and there's websites up now, where they've been designing massive machines, these monster machines like something out of a science fiction movie, that literally are called urban eaters. Now, I'm sure you heard that Obama is in negotiations with another fellow who supposedly came up with the idea by himself, which is nonsense, to start tearing down urban sprawl.
Right.
Knocking all the and so on. Well, the architects, if you go into what they've been taught that in the world that they're bringing in now, they won't need cars. Cars were only necessary when workers had to travel to work and factories and so on. Now that you're deindustrialized, you'll all have to move into the already overcrowded cities. And they're going to knock all these urban areas down. It's rather odd that it was already planned by world architects in the World Architectural Association long before Obama mentioned this thing. You see, we're just running through a script here.
Sure.
We're living through a script. And I can always think of Mad Magazine, that when they packed in at the end, they said it's because you couldn't really use satire anymore because things had become so bizarre. Now, 2001 happened, I was on the air that night, and I said, as we go through the changes that you will live through, I said, the hardest thing to hold on to will be your sanity. And that's what you're getting right now. The U.S.'s job and mission was to standardize the world under one system, and I said when they're finishing off standardizing the world, they'll be pulling the rug from the Americans back home under their feet, pulling the rug away, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and here we are, and like you say, it's the Fabian playbook. You can read about this over the years, and the Fabians, for their ends, were very wise to do things incrementally. But now we're really, in many ways, at end days. 9/11, it's very easy to look back a few years and see that was the plan for causing people to be willing to hand over a lot of personal rights in the name of protection. Well, now we have the economic crisis, where people here again are willing to hand over almost collectively, well, healthcare is one thing in this country right now, but in general their prosperity if they are quote-unquote protected. So what worries me, Alan, is that if you look at human nature as a whole, the people are not having to be led very forcefully. They're running toward it.
They've been trained, and that's the key to it. I've got articles by some of the big players in the manipulative techniques of controlling. They call it public relations today, and the guy who invented public relations, he preferred to call it propaganda. He said that we're in a process of training the public, constantly training them, always updating them and training them. And when you think of it, that was Bernays, who claimed that this is the man that to Madison Avenue said gave the Americans their culture. He trained them into the mm-hmm. consumer society, but also he knew that there'd have to be a post-consumer society to please the groups that he belonged to. And that's what you're in today, a post-consumer society. See, they gave you a little bit of the good life as long as America was paying up the cash, supplying the military, the weaponry to fight the wars across the planet, knowing eventually they'd have no more wars to fight, and then they'd have to turn their guns on the people. That was how the Soviet Union was too. When you run out of enemies and you put an iron curtain around yourself, you must find enemies within to justify you remaining in power, you see?
Yes.
And so in this world society, we're getting trained now to consume less. And sustainability is a big term they're using as well. And you find all the big players on all the big foundations that finance the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, and all the greenie groups and so on. The top guys like Rockefeller himself, he's up on Google there at mainstream world meetings, still at his age, and he's in his 90s now,
right.
On his favorite topic, talking about the need to handle overpopulation and manage it now, and actually go ahead and manage it somehow. So these characters have been singing the same songs for many, many years. The media has cooperated so well with them. In fact, Rockefeller complimented the media at one of the Bilderberger meetings. He says, you know, we could never have got this far without your aid. In other words, their aid in keeping quiet. And so they've achieved their goals pretty well. They've been training the public. And when you think of it, we're like computers. This is how Bernays basically described it, that you feed the data into the people. And now that's like downloading your latest update for spyware or whatever. Right. And as it's finishing the download of the latest data, it's eradicating the previous data. Well, most people today have no memory of anything that happened even 5 years ago. That they're given 99% trivia and 1% fear, you know.
Right.
And so they have no recollection of all the other amazing things that have happened in the last few years, and they can't put it together because they can't remember them all. Because, as Bernays says, we're the most adaptable species on the planet. We adapt so quickly into the new way, and the new way, and the new way. And that, again, in the book, The First Global Revolution, written by the founders of the Club of Rome, the premier think tank for all of this, their job was to come up and find ways to get the world to unite under a global system. And in the book, the founders say, in the 1970s, they sat round tables trying to find scare tactics, because what they said was, the only time people give up their rights and allow the government to govern them and order them about and take their rights away from them is under a warfare scenario.
Right, when they're
so
afraid.
They look for all kinds of enemies in a global society where technically there are no enemies. And so this came up with the idea of global warming.
Right.
That's what they said. Said that would fit the bill. Man was now an enemy of the planet. And now they had to convince the public that that was so through massive propaganda and repetition and through the schooling system. And then in that case, since man was destroying the planet and man was an enemy of the planet, man was labeled the enemy, the experts would have to guide us out of this mess. And so that's what they said, that would fit the bill.
Yeah, and boy, does it. Global warming is the perfect example, not only of how to control, but how easily people can be controlled, because this is without any science logic whatsoever, and yet wholesale people are buying it. Alan Watt is with us. CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com is his website. A lot to digest, but definitely start. It does start to get a mite depressing when you realize that the plans put forth 100 years ago are coming to their final fruition. And, of course, nothing better than our current economic crisis to get us there. We'll talk about that. And as you say that, when you think economically, and we've talked a lot about this, as what would get us out of this mess, the easiest answer is massive depopulation. Yeah, well, I'm thinking of the vaccines. I'm thinking of, isn't it interesting that health care is coming up right now? And more. Next hour, yes, absolutely, we'll take your questions right here on The Raleigh James Show with Alan Watt.
It's The Raleigh James Show. To the max. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-8...
No, don't. Call me next half hour and I'll share Alan Watt with you. But for now, I'm going to hog him for the next half hour. really distressing when you realize that if you want to know where the future is going, politically speaking, which encompasses all of your life, believe me, it's written down in playbooks repeatedly, and it's been carried out. And we're here, which is the interesting part. And people don't realize it. Every time I hear somebody talking about that we'll have an economic recovery, I have to laugh. Recover to what? Recover to debt? Interesting to see how debt's being forced on us more every day, too. You think the Cash for Clunkers program is anything but that? Think about it. How many people had paid off cars and they're now financed because they thought the government was giving them $4,000? It's insane. But as Alan is saying, you've been programmed and you're reacting. And of course, I know the underlying question is, well, for those of us who see it, and I'm sure that this is Alan's greatest frustration because he not only sees it, but he writes about it eloquently and speaks about it daily. Is there any escape for some of us, or is it like a Sartre novel? All right, so we'll get back to Alan Watt. You'll get to cuttingthroughthematrix.com, I hope. There's a link at Raleigh.net.
The Raleigh James Show.
Let me mention the Sea Crane Company a moment and say that a lot of people will say all the time, the things you're talking about, I don't hear about them anywhere else. And of course, you know they're online. You can go to cuttingthroughthematrix.com and read and listen and much more. It's all over the place. But what good does that do you unless you're going to sit in front of your computer all day? Well, if you've got a broadband connection like a cable or DSL modem, there is something you can do. You can have a Wi-Fi radio. These are the absolute best. It's a way to hear every stream online without even turning on a computer. Not only is everything organized so it's easy to find, but it's convenient. You want to listen in the bedroom, the bathroom, the kitchen, whatever, you listen just like it's a radio. Only you're hearing over 16,000 streams that AM and FM and the talking heads aren't telling you about. You can read all about Wi-Fi radio at the Sea Crane Company, ccradio.com. Then it comes time to choose one that'll work for you, and I hands down recommend the CC Wi-Fi for so many reasons. For one thing, it's highly selective, so if you're using a wireless access point, which I highly recommend, it'll pick up anything. If you're traveling, even the most sluggish in a hotel on the road, it'll pick it up, so you've always got a signal. But the other thing, if you want to hardwire it, you don't have a wireless access point or don't want to use one for some reason, it's got an Ethernet jack. So Cat 5, no problem. It's got a remote with 99 presets. It's easy to use, intuitive. You will have no trouble. And it's based on the Receiva technology, which means they're the people who have more stations than anyone else. But in addition to that, they're the people who, if you find a stream that isn't on your Wi-Fi radio, you go to their website, they'll add it within 24 hours. Can't beat that. Wi-Fi radio is a way to hear everything that the talking heads aren't telling you. And at this point in time, knowledge is power. No, that. You can listen to your favorite stuff too, even if it's your favorite Northern Soul oldies or beach music or whatever you like. You'll find it on Wi-Fi. Even the Beatles from Russia. Not sure what that says. I think Alan Watt has a few things to say about that. But you can probably, certainly, I know I was listening to Alan Watt last time he was on Alex Jones. I was listening to that right on my Wi-Fi radio. So you will never be without information or entertainment with a Wi-Fi radio. Go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com, or give them a call. They'll be back tomorrow whenever you get up in California. They'd love to talk to you personally at 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE, and you tell them that Raleigh sent you. And I promise next half hour we will let you have at Alan, but for now I'm hogging him. So here we are in the end days, and it seems to me, Alan, that the only way this works to the elite's advantage is with massive depopulation.
Yeah, as I say, Sir Crispin Tickle, who's one of the heads of the Optimum Population Trust, who is a Huxley, and the Huxleys have always been into this world management scheme, going all the way back to Sir Julian Huxley, the best friend of Charles Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
But Sir Crispin Tickle, who's descended from the Huxleys, he's an advisor to Prince Charles, and we heard his speech recently too, about the need to dismiss too many people, etc., parroting his father, Prince Philip,
mm-hmm.
who said the same thing a few months before that. So they're out in the open convincing the public that they are the problem, which is exactly what I said. The Club of Rome came up with this idea, And all they have to do now is train the public to believe it through repetition, simple repetition, and an array of supposed experts appearing in all television shows on a daily basis, saying the same thing, parroting global warming and scarcity of resources and all this stuff. And so we are now the enemy. The public are the enemy. And see, according to the Fabian system, at the end, when they got rid of the masses who have there's no function in a post-industrial society.
Correct.
In other words, it's run on economics. The whole Fabian idea is an economic system, and ecology as well, resources and economy. Therefore, we'll simply be surplus, or as one of the other members, Sir Bertrand Russell said, the useless eaters. And so they have to get rid of the useless eaters now. There's no purpose for us, and they don't believe in keeping pets around. So the road is obvious for us. But they need us to, as always, it's so amazing, we're the only species where we have to acquiesce to their demands before they can go ahead and implement them. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. They can convince us to allow ourselves to be sterilized, euthanized, maybe even starved to death under the coming planned food shortages, and we'll accept it, but they must have our agreement before they can go ahead and do it. It's quite amazing. Every other species has to be hunted by other species, but when it comes to humanity being hunted by its elites, they must need their approval, and generally, unfortunately, they get it, and it's gotten by our silence. Legally, that's consent, you see.
Now, it's interesting. I certainly see exactly what you're saying about our complicity in this. The other thing, though, that seems to be under the radar is the way they are, whether we're going to talk about chemtrails or whether we're going to talk about these insane vaccinations, Gardasil being just one of them, or the coming flu vaccination, or, of course, the takeover of healthcare. It seems that on the one hand, they're convincing us with their ecological claptrap, but on the other hand, they're undermining us without the public's knowledge.
Yes, it's both. You see, the public have been trained, and Brzezinski put this very well in his own book, Between Two Ages, written in the 70s. He said that shortly the public will be unable to think for themselves. He says they'll only be able to repeat what they heard on the previous night's news, mm-hmm. In other words, downloads. And he said eventually and shortly they'll be unable to reason for themselves. They will expect their favorite faces on television to do their reasoning for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, that has happened.
Yes.
That truly has happened. Yeah. I can remember when Americans were suspicious of news because they knew the big magnates and moguls and they knew their histories, and they knew that news was owned and the companies were owned by private moguls with their own political agendas. But now, really since about the 70s onwards, they've gradually trained the public through the creation of what Brzezinski said too. Brzezinski said in that book, we shall create personality cults in politics and in media. And when these people become your fathers and your mothers, you'll grow up with them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's happened. And the people grew up with the Cronkites who just simply told you after a slanted spiel every night, that's the way it is. And people believed it. And it never occurred to them that he was a member of the World Federalist Society and got a reward just before he died, you know. He said he always believed in global government.
Sure.
This is an internationalist giving Americans their mainstream news and telling them why they had to go to war, etc.
I think one of the things that really helps that agenda is the divide and conquer mentality on top of it, saying that, well, you're in this country a Republican or a Democrat and you like one and you hate the other. And that divide and conquer makes it even easier to follow the cult of the personality who's spewing forth the rhetoric you are attuned to. It's a faster way to do it.
It's very fast. It's very effective. And as I say, people are now trained. They're not suspicious of mainstream media. Most folk are not suspicious of it at all. And in fact, it's like Hitler said, if you're going to tell a lie, it must be a big lie.
Right.
People can understand the small lies they might tell themselves. They can never, ever identify with someone telling such a whopper of a lie.
It's global warming.
Blinking.
Yeah, yes. Right, as global warming, sure, because the average person, even someone who's fairly discerning, doesn't have the facts at hand to really crunch them. So if the folks who are in their particular cult are saying it's real, it's very easy to assume that, oh, it must be real. Now, of course, for somebody like yourself, and to a lesser degree, somebody like me, who can see through this very easily and can see exactly where we are right now and have read the Fabian playbook and know what the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland is putting forth when you want to see economically, you know, just read their papers. And here we are. Is there any way for individuals who are aware to protect themselves from what is coming?
To be honest with you, it has to literally reclaim their individual rights. You cannot give up rights for safety, because there's no safety at all if you give away your rights. You got to take them all back. And to be honest, this is another part you see that people have they haven't noticed, as this has been so insidious. Government is there supposedly to serve the people. And they've been training the people in the last few years in this new term they're calling governance. And the people haven't said, well, even asked the question, what is governance compared to governments?
Yeah.
Government is supposed to be there to serve you. Governance is their society of experts who are there to order you.
Right, to control you,
sure. Compliance. So that's the difference, and we've got to stop it, because we're already all living across the Western world, and in fact all the way to Australia even, under a police state.
Yes.
We're under a police state. When you're asked for ID cards, you've got checkpoints on roads, you can be detained indefinitely without charge, etc. And people are being tortured abroad and at home. It's also happening at home. You're under a police state. Britain's just announced a massive multi-million pound scheme to implement cameras
right.
in families' homes to watch the families.
Right, and people are comfortable about this. And even things as seemingly benign as land conservation, we're always stunned when we're driving through Calgary to see, 5,000 square foot expensive houses on postage stamp lots because they're not allowed to have any land. And you say
to
yourself,
right, yeah,
I kind of understand that maybe in Toronto, maybe even in downtown Vancouver, but how the hell did anybody in Calgary accept this? And nobody questions it.
They don't, but under the Fabian system, too. You find this under the Communist Manifesto, the Fabian system, and the International Socialist Agenda, all the same system, by the way, that there would eventually be no private property at all.
Right.
That's still on the go. That eventually there'll be no private property. And you have to go into the books again by Lord Bertrand Russell. Now, he's a lord. People don't catch on. Why are British lords, these hereditary aristocrats, pushing what seems to be communist ideals? That's exactly what Quigley said too. He said our members in America are often mistaken for communists because the agendas are the same.
Yeah.
Well, that is the same agenda, and we're going to be taxed out of our homes, number one. And by the way, the same group, the Council on Foreign Relations, Royal Institute for International Affairs, brought forth the income tax laws and got them on the table mm-hmm. for the U.S. and Britain. They will also take pride in having the property taxes put on the books as well for laws for those countries, because they were both to be used as weapons on the public. Now we're seeing it actually used on the public.
Yeah, because with
in other countries like Britain, you're not allowed to sell your home now without bringing in another private public partnership from an approved government organization. And it'll cost you £5,000 to £10,000 minimum to upgrade your house with insulation before you're allowed to sell it for heat-saving properties.
They're starting that here, too.
Canada, where I am here, you can't sell your home unless you get and put in a drilled well, if you can get approval for it, by the way.
Right.
And a new septic up to the brand new standards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you're literally up to your eyes in debt already. Folk are trying to pay off mortgages. Now they're told, well, you can't sell a home unless you spend another $20,000 to $25,000. So you walk away from your home. That's what you do.
And that's what they're doing. Right now, it's forecasted that within the next year and a half, half of all Americans will owe more on their homes just on the mortgage alone than the value of the house. And you mentioned property taxes. And, of course, that means people don't realize, but with property taxes, you never own your home because anybody can control that. And I assume that that's going to get much worse as governments are seeking additional sources of money. So here we are, literally, it's heating up, it's snowballing because of know, if nothing else, just we're now moving exponentially, I think, on this Fabian plan. And while it would be nice to say that Alan Watt will awaken the masses and people will begin to think for themselves, the likelihood is, of course, anything but. So for those of us few who do think for ourselves, is there a way to remain under the radar?
I think there's not so much it's not so much keeping under the radar. In fact, I think it's impossible today.
Okay.
I've had people ask me before, can they do this very thing? And I say to them, well, remember when Bush was in and he said they were putting up this system called Total Information Network?
Yeah, yes.
And I said, well, total information means total information. That means everybody and about everything that they do. And he didn't set it up. Then you find out that the Rand Corporation set up this system of game theory in which they run the Cold War on. And they had every single citizen's name, address, habits, everything they knew about the individual and their family history, their medical history, all this kind of psychological histories in massive computers. And they ran these computers and came, it was all under the premise that everyone lived for self-interested purposes. That was all.
Mm-hmm.
And so this total information network has been going on your whole life, and you didn't even know it, because it was done under the auspices of the NSA, you see, and the Rand Corporation. This is stepping it up even further now. With now that everyone's got computers, they get instant access to your data, and they store your data and analyze it every day. And anything outside your normal, someone that you email that you haven't emailed before, it brings up a red light and they check out who this person is and what you have in common. You wouldn't believe how detailed it is. And so therefore, there's no privacy. The world they're bringing in is to be a world of no privacy.
Yeah, well, here's the part that
they've already trained the children.
Yes,
that this is normal. The children literally think this is normal.
Not only that, they welcome it. The one that blows me away, and I thought I'd seen it all, Alan. And when I saw Twitter and individuals who quickly would run to their computer to say, "I'm in the bathroom now. I'm out on the porch now," for the world to see, I'm saying, "What kind of human need is this that I don't understand?"
Mm-hmm. That's right. And you got to remember too, these children, you see, were brought up going into school through metal detection machines.
Right.
Getting patted down, searched, having guys with black outfits on inside the school gates, having their lockers raided and all the rest of it, and being fined or something if they brought an aspirin to school,
right.
All this kind of stuff. And so they've been taught to obey, 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 and if you obey, you're left alone. But they've also been taught in a new type of schooling, and the schooling is basically groupthink. And what the new term for it, they call democracy. This is democracy, they say. And the teacher will lead them through a way of thinking on a particular topic until they all come to consensus, prearranged consensus,
mm-hmm.
All the prearranged consensuses on the particular topics. And if a person shows individual traits and doesn't agree, then they're actually shunned by the group. So they've been taught that individualism is bad.
Right.
Now, you look at the United Nations definition of a good world citizen. Now, the World Citizen Society is set up, and the awards are given out by Mr. Rockefeller, by the way, in the U.S.
Of course.
And he's been doing that all through the Cold War right up to the present. And but anyway, they're also teaching at the United Nations under the same group that a good citizen is a good producer and consumer. But a good citizen is also someone who is a societal member. He's not an individual. They say that individualism is the enemy of peace,
mm-hmm.
world peace.
You know, interesting, a good producer, because, of course, now in America there is no more production, and there's not much of a service industry either. So looking on the short term rather than where we're ultimately going, say, where are we in 2 to 5 years? Because it can't be good.
It's not going to be good because on my website, in the archive section, I have a 90-page report from the think tank, the top think tank for NATO and the British military. The U.S. also is in NATO and Canada,
yeah,
and so on. And 90 pages where they actually go through what they foresee for the next 30 to 50 years. And it starts to make sense when you see all these police and paramilitary organizations in the streets now. They're called police, but they're actually paramilitary. They say that it's going to be 30 years of rioting, minimum,
mm-hmm.
starting maybe in the Middle East, but eventually across the whole of Europe and the Western world. And the riots will be about unemployment, food, joblessness will be the big, big topic. And people will be basically fighting the authorities. They foresee this coming. After that was published, the 90-page report was first mentioned in the Guardian newspaper, and then I got a hold of the 90 pages from the military organization and put it up on my website. It was followed about a month later by a United States Department of Defense projection by their think tank, and it was exactly the same.
When do these food riots, if you will, start?
They have rioting predicted to be around 2010-12.
Okay.
And being sporadic here and there initially, but eventually growing in numbers. And they're actually predicting that there'll be such vast riots and flash mobs, they call them, people getting together via fast communication and arriving in certain spots, that they might have to even use, and they're prepared to use, if necessary, battlefield neutron bombs.
Sure.
Very large crowds of them. Yeah.
Sure, I wouldn't. And that, you know, that fits right into depopulation of, because what a better way than for the public safety, gee, we had to do this. So
yes.
that works for me. It also makes sense that it will start someplace like the Middle East, someplace that's not what we consider the industrialized West, but not too long before it gets here. Are any areas more prone and others more immune, to your best of your knowledge, just living in the country better than living in the city, etc.?
I would have said at one time that the U.S. had more chance because it did have far more small private farms.
Uh-huh.
But there's been a war on private farms for a long time now.
Yes.
You've had so much government interference, putting farmers off their land under environmental nonsense and so on, that they've done away with it. That was the intention, because the United Nations Department of Agriculture, the chief, the CEO, had said at one point that farming was too important to be left to, or food was too important to be left to farmers.
Yes, and of
course,
that's
why you have the rise of the big agri-food corporations.
And Kissinger, of course, said, control the food, you control the populace. The heck with oil, control the food. You betcha Alan Watt is our guest, and that's exactly what they do. And if you think Monsanto isn't the enemy, you're not looking closely. They're not completely alone, though. We will take your calls next hour, I promise. In the meantime, if you're interested in anything we're talking about, and I assume you'll be interested in everything we're talking about, cuttingthroughthematrix.com will give you all you want and more. Yes, you want a sleepless night? Courtesy of Alan Watt, you'll get one.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
Where my Annie and old Papa Danny almost made it to the Hall of Fame. Caught smoking cigarettes with no name. He said, she said, we said, they said, we know what's going on behind closed doors. He heard, she heard, we heard, they heard. Now let me tell you some more.
After living in three dozen cities, she's finally run out of them. It's the Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh at 888-876-5593. 888-88-RALEIGH.
Yeah, he said, she said. You've heard it all before in bits and pieces. And, of course, the talking heads don't endorse it, so you're not ready to believe it. But here to tell you that everything that's happening right now, you don't have to consult a psychic to find out what's coming next, because the Fabians and those of their ilk were kind enough to state it for you. You can read all about it. And the guy who has been researching it for years is Alan Watt, perhaps the preeminent researcher on this subject. You can get to cuttingthroughthematrix.com. www.alanandalan.com and read to your heart's content. And I've been talking with Alan, and of course my my inclination is to hog him for the next hour, but I promised we'd open him up to you, and we will do that. So all you have to do is give us a call, 610-640-6400. We'll get to Steve in Cave City, and there's room for you too. Yeah, but first I want to mention OIDA. And, you know, one of the things underscoring everything we're talking about tonight is that none of this could happen if the masses of people were not involved and aware. The complicit agreement of the public is what gets this over the fastest. And, you know, it's not that different when you talk about trade associations. If you are a commercial driver, you know the only organization that represents you exclusively is OIDA. And right now, with 160,000 members, their voice is heard on Capitol Hill, whether they're talking to legislators or regulators. But you put a million members strong into OIDA, now they have a seat at the table. Now Congress is not going to pass legislation that doesn't incorporate their views. And that's the only way you're getting from here to there. OIDA's been around for over 35 years. They do a great job at representing your interests, whether it's filing lawsuits on your behalf or giving you great discounts or group insurance. But what's critical is influencing the political decision. And the only way to make their voice stronger is with a larger membership base. And that is why I implore you, if you are driving commercially, and I don't care if you're company or independent, local or over the road, union or non-union, you can drive a big rig or a bread truck. It doesn't matter. If you're driving commercially, join OIDA. The good news, $25 for your first year dues at 6.8 cents a day. There's nobody who can't afford that. The bad news is that it's one member at a time. It really does take you. So if you've been putting it off, please join OIDA. Say Raleigh James, pay $25. You will see, get enough members into OIDA, the paradigm shifts for you as a driver. And right now, in 2009, it has never been as critical as it is today. So you can do it online at OOIDA.com, OOIDA.com. Or you can do it by phone at 800-444-5791, 800-444-5791. But however you do it, joining OIDA is the only way to benefit you and every other driver on the road when it comes to influencing the Capitol Hill decision. So please join OIDA. I appreciate that. Now, we will get to Steve. We got Ken. We got Gary. We've got Alan Watt with us for the next hour. So I promise to shut up and leave the floor open to you. You go to cuttingthroughthematrix.com and you will read about everything we're talking about. So let's kick it off with Stephen in Cave City. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Raleigh. Great show, and it's an honor to speak to Mr. Watts. My question is, since they've already had all this planned, and like I feel that the elections are rigged and the politicians are part of the problem, so while we still have, the only time I ever saw the globalist pause was when they thought they were collapsing the economy too fast. So instead of fighting against it and beating our heads against the wall, while we still have an inkling of freedom and our weapons, why not give them everything they want now and get the revolution started now?
Uh-oh. All right, good question. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, don't think they didn't think about that a long time ago. You see, they put Mr. Bush in to set up the machinery to take care of all the problems, and now they've put in the next man to implement the last parts of the socialization of the Americas, basically. And he'll use the machinery that's set up. People don't realize that troops for years now have had training in urban warfare. In fact, in Chicago, one of the biggest bases there is a town, a whole town built for urban warfare practice. And it's been there for about 10 years now. So they have them all over the place. They're well aware of the system they're bringing in. They're well aware there will be trouble back home. There's no doubt about it. And they've been preparing for this for a long time. Not so long ago, too, I read articles on the air where guys straight over, regiments straight over from Iraq were now being deployed also at home, supposedly in preparedness for emergencies and so on. So they're well aware. Police for years now have two uniforms. One is their regular uniform, the other one is their SWAT team outfit. They've been training these guys in part of what they call the multi-jurisdictional task force. I talked about that this multi-jurisdictional task force back in the early 90s, and people laughed at me. Last year on the news in CBC Canada, they were showing you policemen from Canada dressed up with the military, taking part in military exercises with regular troops, knocking down doors in Iraq and pulling people out so they end their guns and so on. And then they come back into their police outfits when they come back home. They've been training and preparing for this for many, many years, and the public are completely unaware of it. You're right, though, to an extent, the longer it goes on this way, and it's almost passing the point of no return, the easier it will be for them to bring you to your knees, because food will be the next major weapon. They always said at the end that they would use the power of the purse and food as well.
Yeah.
And with money, you see, money to the elite at the top is nothing. It's a tool. Everyone down below lives on it. It's the most essential thing we have. If you don't have a land or crops or whatever, money is the key. So as long as we believe in it, then we must need it to survive. The ones at the top use money as a weapon and a tool to control the public. And that's what we're seeing used against us. Now, you haven't seen the full effect of it yet, and it will definitely get worse. But you're quite right. I mean, technically, just to quote Jefferson, he said that really you need a revolution every generation or two to clean out the corruption that will come into government.
But we're too far past that right now for it to be truly effective, aren't we?
Oh yes. And the thing is, too, the top, they've already looked at all these possible scenarios, as I say, that 90-page report from Britain and the equivalent one from the Department of Defense for the U.S., they say that most riots, etc., will be just that, like rioting mobs that have no central command.
Sure.
In fact, if you ask them why they're rioting, they'll all give you different reasons. That there's no cohesive policy. If you have a revolution, you've got to have a doctrine.
Right.
And the doctrine has to be taught so everyone knows what they're fighting for, etc., and where they're heading at the end of it.
And we're not there. You're so,
so
right.
People have been so scattered and separated from each other, deliberately, by the way. The one thing they were terrified at the top was, and they discussed this in great detail, was any kind of religious movement that would just come back again, because it was the only organized structure in the Americas. And if that was to turn against them, people would have a sort of a natural fanaticism for freedom.
Yeah.
Then that would be their main opponent. And that is why, even when President Bush was in, the neoconservatives literally bought off or put in top men in charge of big Christian outfits to make them all stand behind the war in Iraq, etc., until you actually had Christians wanting to go off and kill for Jesus, thinking it was their duty. So they've effectively infiltrated any opposition. There's a lot of good people out there who still have an idea of an old cultural policy, a previous cultural policy, with rights and humaneness in it and cohesion amongst themselves. But that has been under such heavy attack. And even the Fabians said that too, they'd have to eradicate all standard mainstream religions in order to bring this particular regime into place.
And that leads us into Ken from Georgia's thoughts. So, Ken, welcome.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you tonight?
All righty.
Okay. My question was, I missed part of the interview and with Mr. Watts there, and I was wondering, with the Pope coming out just before the G8 summit and saying that it's time for a World Bank or a world organization to watch over the finances for us, what role religion, any, all of them, would play in leading the people into the monster, the machine that's being built against us, and I'll listen off the air and I'll listen on the radio.
Thanks. Good question, especially with regard to the Pope, and you heard that statement too, Alan, and it had to be somewhat shocking that it was so blatant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you that Malachi Martin was a sort of renegade to the Catholic Church. He was an advisor to two popes and a cardinal, and he also was a high Jesuit. But he also came out on his own afterwards, and for years he warned the people that the Catholic Church was completely infiltrated, and that the boys. In fact, he actually mentioned Ratzinger before he died. He mentioned them in one of his talks. I have it here.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this man is a politician. He's not a religious man at all. He's a politician. And, of course, the idea was to use all existing religions, especially the Catholic Church, it has too many followers to just discard without using. And the Fabians always said that you look for all large organizations, then you put your own people in at the top. Now you can lead millions of people. You don't have to start from scratch. You use existing ones. And that's what they've done with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, according to Jacques E. Lowell, was advisor to François Mitterrand, and he also was a high advisor of the United Nations. He put out a couple of books, and in one of them he talks about that it's a distinct possibility that even Israel will be made sort of the capital of the world for commerce eventually down the road. That's one possibility that had been discussed to the United Nations, and he wrote it. Jacques Attali wrote in his last book about that. He said the Catholic Church would have to be involved, Judaism would have to be involved, and even factions of Islam would have to be involved. And just in today's paper, there's an agreement now between a sect, a very small sect of Islam. There's a book actually just came out about it, and the new Sanhedrin of that just organized in Israel to make this come about. So if you really look at the Catholic Church's structure, which did incorporate a lot of paganism in order to keep itself as a powerful movement, and in the early days, there's no doubt it incorporated a lot of paganism. It's ideally set up to be what we call the religion for the New Age. You could say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's ideally set up in its structural system. Most priests today don't believe in evil anymore. You know, it's like most Christians in America too. They'll believe in a God, because a nice Santa Claus, but they don't want to believe in evil. Well, you can't have one without the other. You see. You need them both if you believe in that religion. But most Catholics today are the same, and they've had their main rites destroyed. Rite, of course, literally is so watered down and changed that it's hardly recognizable by Catholics. And they've also joined the United Nations and succumbed to the United Nations. The United Nations, to join the global society of states, you must not claim that you have the exact truth
right.
on your religion. You must accept that all religions have the same kind of truth.
Well, Vatican II, I think, really was the turning point that people could point to and see very, very visibly. But apart from the spirituality of any of these issues, when you talk about absolute control historically, the Catholic Church has an entire history of this.
Oh, absolutely. And it was definitely a political, and from its very foundations, it already was a political structure of an empire. And it incorporated religion into it too. And it's surprising, really, in a sense, that it lasted this long to me.
Yeah.
It came under fire in the 1500s when the Cathars and Albigensi, etc., massive organizations which literally thought they could take over the Catholic Church and bring in their own religion, when they went head-to-head with the Catholic Church, the Cathars apparently, to the world, lost, but they didn't. They moved into Germany, France, and so on, and then out came Rosicrucianism, and then eventually Freemasonry and international brotherhoods, which also spawned the communists as well. Yeah.
You betcha. We got Mike in South Philly. Hello, Mike.
Oh, hi, Raleigh. Mr. Watts, this is absolutely great. I first learned about this whole thing about the socialism as religion and from Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and then the Messianic Legacy. I never got caught up in the silly concept that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. It didn't matter to me, but the point that what they were doing was transferring political cultural into a base religion for everyone, and that was the point of the two books that most people miss. But then it got compounded with the mass drugging of society. Fluoride drinking water around the world is 65% effective in making people compliant to what they're told to do. How do we fix this problem with it's religion to people, politics, and second, they're drugged. You can't turn off drug by making people think.
You can't, and you're quite right, too. Fluoride itself was used by the early communists, then by Germany when it went to countries that would add fluoride to water. Britain followed it on very quickly. Now, this is the first authorized example of putting a drug. It is a medication. It's classed as a medication or drug. into your water supply. And it does have a calming effect. There's an article came out recently, I read it on the air, from a mainstream newspaper, saying that countries were studying, I think it was a little place in Japan, where the water was naturally heavily fluoridated, and it had a calming effect on the people. Well, they want us all to be drugged and cam, of course, there's no doubt about that. And that's the real reason it was put in the water. But when you go into the writings of another Fabian and Royal Institute of International Affairs member, Julian Huxley, the brother of Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World and gave you the society they're bringing in the novel, Julian Huxley talked about using the needle as well to literally make people comply and alter their mentality. Lord Bertrand Russell said the same thing. We shall use the needle on the general population for compliance. Literally, these guys knew exactly where they were going. They would train the public that every injection was for your health, etc. But meanwhile, we find out, for instance, that the first polio shots, and I have the video of the guy who worked on the drug along with Salk and Sabin, saying that he was the one who warned them that the simian 40 virus that was in every one of those shots had only one function, and that was to cause cancer down the road in every person who got the shot.
Right.
So they're already planning and doing. See, this is a hard step to take for most people. They always think there's going to be some cataclysmic end at the end of time. They don't realize this war has already been started and implemented upon them from their birth. And that is one of the reasons why you have this gigantic increase in cancers all over the world. We have allergies going up, tripling in a matter of 10 years.
Sure.
Everyone's allergic. That's autoimmune problems. All these inoculations you get affect your immune system and give you autoimmune problems. It makes you wide open to die off with a simple cold down the road if you can't fight it off. And now they've drummed up this fake flu scare that literally is an utter farce, because all the other scientists who have come out and explained the flu in detail and mentioned that this is not a flu at all. They're not even testing people with swabs and analyzing it. They're just diagnosing a sniff or a sneeze and so on, or hay fever, and putting it down as swine flu. And that keeps the World Health Organization very happy. There's nothing really going on with this thing, yet they're so intent on using mandatory inoculation for a non-existent flu.
Right.
So what's the score here? I don't trust this at all, and I certainly will not be taking it.
Yeah, me neither.
Yes.
I have one other thing, if you have time today.
Sure.
If you guys would discuss the role of, who's the guy from the United Nations? Murray Strong. Murray Strong, Timothy Wirth, Schneider, what their roles in all this have been over the past 25 years.
Great, great
I'm hang
comment.
Up. Thank you, Raleigh.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, all right, Murray Strong, go for it.
Yeah, Murray Strong was picked up by Mr. Rockefeller himself when he was 15 and groomed for his position. It's a fervent Fabian, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Maurice Strong had all the natural psychopathic qualifications as a control freak. He just knows how the world should be run and how we should all live, you see. And he was elevated into amazing high positions of power. He's been into the United Nations in different positions over the years. He's still there today. He was head of the World Bank at one point. He was the man who was sent over to China by the United Nations and given a massive office complex to set up the merging of the economies so that China would become the industrial leader for the world, using our tax money from across the world to do so. But an amazing thing about Maurice Strong was in a documentary from public broadcasting one rainy, sunny Sunday afternoon, it showed you him in China coming out of his office. He took a trip to Beijing, a cemetery there, to visit his aunt's grave, his aunt. Now, Maurice Strong's from Canada, and his aunt is near Mao Zedong's grave. And on the gravestone, it said, confidant and advisor to Mao Zedong. His aunt was an advisor to Mao Zedong. These families, there are families that are called revolutionists, international, intergenerational revolutionists, who literally have been at this for an awful long time. People don't realize that Thomas Paine was a professional revolutionist. he was sent over from England. Then that once he finished with the U.S., he went over to continue it in France. But he was only one of many lineages that were doing the same thing. Other lineages were into the sciences, like the Huxleys, etc. And every generation of the Huxleys has their own special part to do with genetic manipulation and control of the public, etc., to bring in a brave new world. So Mr. Strong is a big, big player in this. Now, he was the guy who fronted the first Rio Air Summit to give sustainability and so on, equal rights to everything that lived except man.
Right, except
and
man.
That humans are the only creature in the entire legislation that aren't mentioned as having any rights at all. And he was asked at the meeting, and I've got it on tape by someone who was there, what about people? He says, there's no rights here for people, insects, animals, and trees, and so on. And Strong turned around and says, when we're finished with you, you'll wish that you had the same rights as a tree.
Which should have been the headline coast to coast and
yes.
Internationally. That's the thing that's just alarming. You have entire colleges where kids are wanting to sign on for their own oblivion, literally, gleefully, joyously, and this doesn't seem to be anyone's headline. And, you know, hopefully at this point, Alan, more people are looking at what you've been saying over the years because it is coming home to roost in front of them.
Yes.
But the majority still are running from it. Oh, well, that's just a band of kooks. Well, and they'll dismiss you any way they can rather than look at what's going on in their own lives. So that's where we'll pick it up. I urge you to look at what's going on in your life, and you'll get a good glimpse into that on cuttingthroughthematrix.com. Alan Watts, our guest, will get to Gary from Terre Haute. There'll be room for you two. You probably have questions. Alan's got some answers right here on the Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm gonna paint a picture of a beautiful girl, someone that I can call my own. Her portrait on the canvas, greatest sight in the world.
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH.
Or better yet, dial us directly at 610-640-6400, 610-640-6400. We would love to hear from you. We're talking with Alan Watt, and we'll continue to do so for the next half hour. Your questions are welcome. We'll get to Gary from Terre Haute and to you. CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com is Alan's website. It is something you should read. And remember, as you do, and you'll see years worth of research, because Alan is no newcomer to this, you will see that most of what he is saying now are things he was saying years before anybody expected a 9/11 or anybody expected a financial crisis. And all of this was planned when you get right down to it. And while you may debate whether the actual events themselves were planned, the one thing that is irrefutable, no matter what side of the aisle you're looking on, if you look at this honestly, it's irrefutable that everything that has happened has been seized upon to get us into the global agenda. And the final days are not pretty ones, that's for sure. So we'll get back to it with Gary's question. John came in, weighed in, said, I got a question, so I promise I'll ask John's questions too, and there's be room for you too in the final half hour.
The Raleigh James Show.
But first, a little celebration. You can fire the phone company. Doesn't that sound delicious? If you have a broadband connection to the internet and you're still paying for landline service, it's like flushing money down the drain. No need to do it. Everybody's looking at saving money, and most people are figuring, well, if they save money, they'll give up services. But when it comes to the telephone, if you've got that broadband connection, you can save a bloody fortune and get better service. Now, we're not talking about using your cell phone as your primary phone, and we're not talking at all about using things like a USB jack or anything like that. We're talking about the same telephone you've been using all along and the same phone number you've always had. We're talking about just getting better service in terms of quality and, for the first time, customer service, significantly lower prices and more features. It's VYL Media that I'm touting, VYLmedia.com. I stake my reputation on the customer service of this company. It is just terrific. A lot of people have offered you a digital phone or alternative phone, VoIP phone. None of them give you customer service, and that's the problem across the board. Well, VYL Media does. Tech support is 24/7 in Oklahoma City. An American answering the phone, no messages and menus and prompts. Real people really helping you. Their business office, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., a real person answering the phone who will give you their phone extension and will give you their email address, so you'll have an honest-to-God contact. Where else are you going to get that? Now, what's it cost? Your entire sign-up fee is $1, and there's no contract, and there's no commitment. So $1, they mail you a device, you plug it into your modem, you plug the phone into it, you start dialing. It is that easy, but if you don't think so, customer service is tech support 24/7. Now, next thing is, what does it cost you a month? Well, let's say you want unlimited calling to the USA and Canada. Knock yourself out. It's $23.97 a month. Call everybody. Doesn't matter. Features, every feature you've ever gotten is included. All your voicemail and your call waiting and your caller ID. And if you can dream it up, they probably offer it free of charge. They'll also give you virtual numbers. These are additional numbers. Of course, you're keeping your home number if you want it. But let's say you've got friends who are back on the East Coast and you're living on the West Coast. Well, why not get a number that's local to your friends so they dial a seven-digit number at no cost to them? You answer on the West Coast at no cost to you, and everybody saves money. I know it sounds too good to be true, and clearly their customer service, initially I thought it had to be too good to be true, but it's not. They are that good and more. VYLmedia.com. But I like you to call their toll-free number. Do that tomorrow, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time, to prove me right on how good that customer service is. And that's 888-369-8647. 888-369-VOIP. VYLmedia.com. Oh, if you need DSL service, depending on where you live, they can provide it. And if you need business class service, oh man, you know what, the phone company socks you for that. Well, you got options here too. Great savings and that wonderful customer service. VYLmedia.com. 888-369-8647. You tell them Raleigh sent you. All righty, so we've got Alan Watt, and I'll save John's question, but Gary from Terre Haute's been hanging on for a really long time, so welcome, Gary.
Raleigh, thank you so much for taking my call. Mr. Watt, I have the Killing Fields of the Khmer Rouge have been a proof of concept, or was Pol Pot just a loose cannon?
Good question.
I don't think it was quite a loose cannon. When you see what happened with Pol Pot, there was a systematic eradication of a particular class of the people, went into action immediately, and he moved entire cities out of the cities and forced millions of people to get into the lands and so on. That's where the killing fields came from and all the rest of it. So he was going to a plan, but there's no doubt about it. I mean, the CIA were in there heavily long before we'd heard his name, and were interacting with at least his agents, you might say. And I think it was a sort of precursor of you see, at the very, very top, with the NSA, CIA, Mossad, MI6, and so on, what they do is they love to have tests, big tests carried out across the world under warfare guises. Just like now, they're testing out equipment in Iraq that literally is a sort of microwave equipment that's just burning people in the seats and buses and stuff, well documented. And no one, of course, will object. No one can get in to object. It's under martial law. But they do the same thing when they have little minor revolutions, et cetera, and so on. They play both sides of the game. They don't even have to come into a country and say, we're the CIA. They can go in under a different guise with front men, et cetera. But what they do is take incredible data collection of projected plans that they suggest be implemented to see how they work. Mm. And it was fascinating to see that this was actually written about before Pot came along.
All right, good question.
And then it actually came into action when he actually did come. And those very things that have been discussed at very high levels actually were all done. Yeah.
All righty. Thanks, Gary. I sure appreciate it. All righty. Now, let me ask John's question before we go on, then we'll get to Charles and to Dave, I promise. But and John's asked me off the air this quite a lot, too, when I go on and on, much like you do, Alan. And he says, well, the New World Order, if they get what they want, how does that help them? Because right now it seems that they have everything anyway. So what do they gain by doing this?
What to gain, apart from mastery and pulling everything off, because what they're doing right now is standardizing every culture in the world into the one same cultural system,
mm-hmm.
and financial system and banking system and so on, under a world government. There's no doubt about that. We saw the Economic Union, now
sure.
it's the American Union. The last signatory, by the way, for the American Union is 2010. They've already done five. There's one to come in 2010. Then we're totally integrated. I don't know if the public in America know that, but it's talked about up in mainstream television in Canada.
Sure.
So what they're doing is going through stages through a formula. What they know by previous experience, if they rush ahead too fast at any part of the Fabian plan, that's why it's Fabian, they can lose control from unforeseen events and circumstances. People who will do things that were unthought of and not put into the possibilities of their plans, reacting in different ways that they hadn't foreseen. That's why they go Fabian style. Fabian,
mm-hmm.
Remember, the Emperor Fabian would take long-term strategies with his enemies over
right.
a long period of time. And
right.
so through incrementalism, that's the key to it, intergenerationally, through incremental changes, you adapt to the little changes until you turn around when you're an adult and everything's completely changed. You say, well, how did that happen? Well, you've adapted to every small part that came along. If they hit you with it all at one time, there'd
sure.
be riots. People don't
sure.
like moving from one system to another system
sure.
suddenly.
So
it shocks them, and they fight for it, and they
yeah.
put up resistance. But when you make them adapt little by little by little, over a period mainly of, I'd say, since the 60s onwards, then you've trained them to accept the coming next part, in fact. You've trained them to adapt, and you've already prepared their minds through repetition of certain key phrases, terminologies, etc., so they'll think it's all quite normal. The next step is quite normal. Sustainable development is coming out, probably it's mentioned 10,000 times a day across the world on mainstream televisions and radios.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a mantra. It's like weapons of mass destruction. Same thing. And Bernice said that they would use this technique, whereas the children in school who are now coming into their teens or 18s or so, they've been hearing this since the year 2000 under UNESCO's plans. They've been getting taught this stuff in school, sustainable development. It's the adults now that have to catch up with it.
So when we're looking, when you're looking at this, and I think you're saying the same thing that I always do, to those true elites, in some ways, it's like a game, not that much different from Milton Bradley, and the game is called control. And when you're controlling as much as you've controlled, to an outsider, it looks like you've got everything you want, but the ultimate goal is to control the world.
The world, yeah. And that's a lot of different cultures, different mental makeups, different cultural values and systems. You have to standardize them all by force if necessary, and that's what geopolitics is all about.
Sure.
Tying it back even with the technocrats like Maurice Strong, this is what Professor Carl Quigley called them and Zbigniew Brzezinski called them. The technocrats, according to Quigley, have the real power. They're unelected. They work behind the scenes. They have the glory of making all the big decisions and getting things done without the public interfering, and they don't have to answer to the public. This world they're bringing in, according to Quigley, is a new feudal system, where the CEOs of the big international corporations will be the new feudal overlords. and we'll be the new peasants, the new serfs on the land, according to how many they actually need to serve them. But it's a never-ending story because they already have, and I was reading Alal's book recently, or Jacques Attali's book recently, I should say.
Yeah.
Jacques Attali said that their hope eventually, after all these riots, and after they've changed the world over the next 50 years, until there's only a few city-states left,
right.
He said that our future lies in the transhumanists. This is the upgraded, genetically modified or even cloned types of humans, and they will obviously serve the elite much more efficiently than we have. At the Newt Gingrich meeting, the International Meeting of Science, which he hosts every year since 2000 at Loyola University, he had them in 2000, the top guys in the biotech industry, saying they were going to, part of the stage to get to that phase would be to chip every member of the public. They said they have the techniques to do it now, it works. They even have central computers set up to handle the public, to program you. And the top scientists from Japan in this field said the world will no longer be a mass of individuals. There will be no individualism. And it said, in fact, it will be impossible to even think of yourself as an individual once this chip is given. He said, think of it more like the hive, the beehive, and you'll hear the whispers of orders coming from central computers to people around you and whispers going back from them to the central computers. So Attali talks about this phase in his last book, and he says that the hope, in other words, they're going to create literal gods that have been genetically modified for themselves, for the elite group, with a mass of servants below them that will not need entertainment. They'll have no ability even to think of themselves as individuals. They'll be purely servants, two types of classes.
Right.
The elite class, who will be technically, and part of their goal, mind you, is physical immortality. One of them is David Suzuki. He came out on national television in Canada. He's a top geneticist and does all these wildlife shows and a head guy at the United Nations for sustainability. He said, we now have the ability to make a person live to 500 years if we wish to, through stopping the time gene.
You know what's really interesting about this, when you take it just from a human nature logical conclusion, the elites, if they get what they want, that's all right for a while. They've got their servitude class and their clones, and they've got their control. But once that control is absolute and those servants are as they want them to be, it isn't too long before they're going to get very bored.
This has happened before in the Middle Ages.
Really?
When the elites become so arrogant, and they have no competition, and no one can fight against them. They're so powerful with their armies and their knights and all the rest of it. They become very aberrant in their behavior because they are technically psychopathic.
Right.
They are really psychopathic. And when they have no enemies, they must find someone to there'll be a period of cruelty like the Middle Ages where they literally roasted people over fires for entertainment and to board.
Right.
But they will eventually turn on each other, you know.
They have to.
And the other thing, too, is there's going to be a leader of the world, the first technical king, you might say. I don't care what title they give him.
Right.
But he'll be the first king of the world. Now, psychopaths can all work together till they get to that stage.
Mm-hmm.
But they all want power. It's a thing within a psychopath. It's a craving, like a drug. So they all want that throne, and I think that's when they'll start going at each other.
Yes, going to be fascinating. I may not be here, but it will be fascinating. All right, let's see if we can get Dave in South Carolina in here. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Riley. How are you all doing tonight?
All right, what's your question?
I had like three.
Okay.
I know you talk about the gold. I was just wondering, just an average person, what somebody can put up for gold. I've got into the heirloom seeds, and I just looking at if this gentleman could give you an idea what you could look at as far as ammunition to hold yourself back.
Okay. All right. Good questions. Listen off the air, Dave. Thanks. Yeah, that goes back again to what can we do? Does owning gold in the short term help? Does it help if you're doing heirloom seeds in your own garden? And what else can you do?
Really, I've been telling people for years, if they can, to try and get somewhere in the country, any little place in the country, far away from the major cities, because they've already said at the top that the first lockdowns are already set up for the cities. Anything after that will take a long, maybe even years, before they get around to major wide rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
And to be so self-sufficient as possible, it's a good idea with the seeds, absolutely. By the way, that bill that put through in the Congress there...
29, so yes.
...has clauses in there that sort of hint at licensing people for even having a garden.
Yes.
So if I grow a garden somewhere in the country, I'll keep it very, very quiet, you know.
Well, the real key is, unfortunately, you won't share it. And
you've got to keep it quiet, even from the government, because they're going to eventually license people to have gardens.
Sure they will. And if they catch you selling even something to your brother, you're in trouble. So
you will be in trouble.
Right. Don't share. Harder and harder to get heirloom seeds, or to get seeds that Monsanto hasn't tainted. And especially harder for small farmers, some of whom, as you well know, in Canada have been put to jail because of cross-pollination. I assume that the move toward to control the food supply is going to jump exponentially in the next 3 to 5 years.
There's no doubt they want the entire food supply of the whole world. This is happening across the world.
Yes.
But if people know Mennonites, for instance, and get friendly with them, because those guys have their own seeds, they're very, very friendly people, and whatever you get, keep quiet about it, and start preparing for a very rough future.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll come through it. But really, within a city, you're going to be at the mercy of the authorities that do want to eventually bring in rationing.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see that that coming. So I would assume that the key is not only to be outside of a major city, but also be in an area where the land will grow something. You know, Arizona is not your best place, because I think the real fight down the road is going to be for water.
Water as well. Food and water are on the cards. The United Nations, the first attempt to take over the world's food supply was put down in Israel at the United Nations meeting back in the 60s, and they talked about the coming water wars and food wars, and that the people had no right, they said, at the United Nations to have access to their own water. This water doesn't belong to you anymore, it belongs to the world, and guess who's in charge of it? The United Nations, not you.
Right, well, exactly. Now, I know there's a number of people, in fact, I've gotten some emails saying, well, give me a timeline, and you sort of did, but are you figuring that it's all going to start hitting the fan in 2010?
That's what the think tanks project, 2010, and then 2012 it will start to heat up, and they project 30 years as they take us through this massive transition from one way of living to another. That's really what it's all about, from one way of living to a completely new system. It's going to take about 30 years of rioting. And I can imagine, too, the ones who will be doing the fighting will be dying off, even getting older in 30 years, and the up-and-coming younger ones will know nothing. In fact, you think about it, since 2001, that there's children today that are about 8 years of age that have been grown up in martial law. They think this is normal.
Right.
They've never known anything to do with democracy, freedom, schools without checkups and cops and so on, and troops on the streets and the subways and all this kind of stuff. They think this is normal. It fits in with their video games and their movies. They're the ones who will grow up as the older ones are dying off in 30 years, and they will comply with everything, thinking it's all quite natural. Because there's nothing to compare it to.
Sure they will. And what you're saying makes so much sense, because incrementally speaking, those of us who in 30 years will be dead just by the clock, there's no reason to mess with us fully. Just let us die, because we will. And so people who are thinking that it's going to be this big cataclysmic moment, I think it will, like I think you do, believe it will be continued, although stepped up, incrementalism, and nature will take its course.
Absolutely. It'll take its course, and as I say, they've already planned an up-and-coming generation that'll fit right into it, into scarcity, and believing they're doing the right thing to save the world by not having very much and living like paupers. And like George Orwell's 1984, he says, some are more equal in such than others in such utopias. Well, it'll be exactly like the Soviet system, where you have this hierarchical elite living on the high hog, and the masses down below living on very little at all. That's the system they're bringing in. This is the new feudal system that Professor Carol Quigley talks about.
Sure. And it's here, and probably one of the very few places you can get all the information is at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. To an extent, foretold is forewarned. I hope everybody will, in fact, go to the site, and I hope you'll join us again.
Oh, I will. It'll be a pleasure to come back on again.
Thank you for everything you're doing, Alan. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
All righty. So, and cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you can not only read to your heart's content, you can also donate because, again, you can tell that big government isn't sending Alan a check. All right, yeah, no doubt about that. Monsanto won't be donating, so it's really up to you and me. So there you have it, Alan Watt, and we're grateful. I will put this up online after the show in perpetuity, should you want to hear it. And, of course, it'll also stream all night tonight. So 610-640-6400 on the Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show. Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
James Show, and I've been waiting for a while to talk to Catherine Austin Fitz, and I know a lot of you have been waiting for this too, based upon email, especially today. You know, very few good things came out of doing Coast to Coast a few years ago, but one of them by far was meeting Catherine Austin Fitz, who just blew me away. If everybody in a government position, be they bureaucrat or elected, would have the integrity of Catherine, we wouldn't have the problem we have now. She is uniquely suited to knowing exactly what is going on. And when I asked John to book her, I hadn't even seen at that point the blog from July 22nd regarding the swine flu. And when I read it, it was one of those immediate gasping recognition type moments of saying, this is exactly what's happening. So you'll hear about that as well as everything else that's happening too. You can go to Catherine's website, which is solari.com. Solari.com. We've got links at raleigh.net as well. And as her blog says, mapping the real deal, we are about to do just that. So next hour, Catherine has agreed to stay for a half hour to answer your questions, because I have a feeling after I'm done hogging her, you're going to have a few questions. Catherine Austin Fitz, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Hi, Raleigh. It's good to be talking to you again, too.
I was, as I say, just mesmerized by your swine flu article, because I've said on the air repeatedly, don't take the vaccine. That's how they'll kill us. But what never occurred to me, and you put this together, so I want you to walk us through this, is that there is a major economic necessity in what may be coming down.
Well, we literally just took all the resources left that are standing behind our retirement promises to ourselves, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and transferred it to the banks. So now it's gone.
Right.
So, I mean, now that you've taken all the money backing all of our big budget contingent liabilities, moved it to the banks, what's going to protect, you know, what's going to be there to pay Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? And if you are going to have to pull the rug from people, how are you going to deal with that? I mean, it's very interesting. I just read the new Kiplinger newsletter, and in it, they refer tangentially to the fact that Social Security will be cutting benefits. I said, what? I haven't read that anywhere. Now, if that's what Kiplinger is saying, how is the administration going to turn to the American people and say, you know something? We're cutting your Medicare and Medicaid benefits. We're cutting your Social Security benefits because we gave that money to the banks.
You know, it's interesting you talk about Medicare and Medicaid, of course, because when you look behind what's going on with this drive to socialize medicine, which is what it is, on the one hand, it's a way for them to broaden the population covered rather than just people over 65 who are more likely to use the care. But the other thing is you look at the carefully wording, and by its very nature, they're planning to ration, particularly ration, 65-plus care.
Right. So in fact, it's a way... It's becoming a way of cutting the health care benefits of people over 65.
Sure it is. And it's a way of increasing the income because everybody will be stuck into the system, including the young and the healthy.
Right. And so it's, you know, this is a package that's not going to work to the benefit of the American people. The part that scares me the most is the database technology they're proposing and the invasiveness of it. So it's going to make it much more expensive for legitimate health care providers, and it's going to give the government and sort of large corporations invasive control of all of our data.
Oh, yeah. The databasing is over the top. And I suspect, though, that there's really nothing new here. They're just codifying what they can already do. Yeah, some of the small players will be in places they haven't been before. But by and large, I think memory being as cheap as what it is, they've already got all the databases they're not admitting
to. Well, but remember, there's still a lot of practitioners who don't keep their records in digital form.
Though there won't be any more. And that already passed,
right,
even apart from this. They're roped into that thanks to the bailout bill.
Right. But it's going to make it much harder for a doctor to recommend what he truly believes as opposed to what the official reality says you've got to recommend in this kind of situation.
Absolutely. And
so it's, you know, this is the government. You won't have a doctor anymore. The government's going to be your doctor.
Yes. Yes, and
right,
while it may not pass in the form that the administration wants it to right now, ultimately, since they've already got the electronic records in there, they're going to get this.
Well, I'm still, what I see, Raleigh, is your, if you look across the areas, what they're doing with this new food safety bill,
mm-hmm,
what they're doing with the health care bill, than what they're doing sort of militarily around the world. I mean, I can only use the word demonic, governmental policy across the board, how it finances itself and how it uses data and what it's doing with the money. And I think the more, you know, more than, the poll suggested to me that more than 80% of Americans were against the bailout. And when the bailouts happened anyway, what you saw was a huge chill go through this country. I mean, it was a silent chill. And then as these various policies are rolling out, you're seeing a tremendous deep disturbance in people saying, you know, something is totally, completely wrong. It's when you see somebody healthy stepping away from, you know, something that's really perverted and unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're watching the separation go on, and I think the question is, will these guys have overplayed their hands? Not in healthcare, but in the combination of all these things. Because all these things, you know, what all these things are saying is, you know, let's have a crash. A crash is better than this.
Well, sure. And, you know, I'm glad you use the word crash, because the thing that has really stunned me, and given your background, I think you'll relate to this, is when they talk about recovery, I say to myself, what are you kidding? To recover to the unsustainable debt structure that we had before? And I don't see on any level how you recover to anything.
Here's how you recover. We have an economy, and the economy has insiders and outsiders.
Yeah.
The outsiders just transferred $12 to $14 trillion. The insiders just transferred $12 to $14 trillion away from the outsiders and into their companies.
Yes.
So they've recovered.
Right. Right, right.
They have recovered.
But when you look at
it, they are better off.
Right, I agree. You're absolutely right.
Goldman Sachs can now pay $900,000 an employee.
Right, right, right. They've recovered.
And so, yes, they have recovered.
Yeah, they're doing just swell. But you look at it for the rest of us, and that's why I want to get into your swine flu data. But even on the surface, without that, what you see is that as all of the jobs continue to be offshored, anything remotely manufacturing, the idea that there can be a recovery into anything, this can't work on paper no matter what.
Well, there's a lot that can be done that could improve the economy, because the thing to understand is, right now at least, there's plenty of money and there's plenty of resources. If you behave in a way that shrinks the pie down to nothing, then there's not enough money. If you all change your behavior and expand the pie to make it bigger, then there's more for everybody. Now, we're behaving as a society in the United States domestically, we're behaving in a way that shrinks the pie dramatically. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that can be done to expand that pie.
Well, let's look at that. For the average individual, what can you do?
Well, let me be the tough guy. How many people in this country do we have with serious drug, alcohol problems, or taking drugs that limit your productivity or your ability to think clearly? If you look at the numbers, it's absolutely fantastic.
Well,
so
that's why I've always said just legalize drugs. There goes our entire economic problem. But
well, you know, if you come into many, I live in a rural county, if you come into many rural counties, basically, the biggest industry is the drugs and the war on drugs.
Right, exactly.
And that's an entire infrastructure that pays people to do things that, one, destroy their body and their health and their ability to think clearly, or pays a group of people to do things that have, you know, that don't produce anything useful. So, and for example, I live in a county where we don't have sufficient farm labor to keep, you know, small farms going and thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, there's a tremendous need. Talk about health care for fresh food. And frankly, one of the reasons is if everybody stopped dealing drugs and doing the war on drugs, you know, suddenly we could start to grow stuff. We could grow orchards. We could grow much more fresh food. You know, I live in a state where there's plenty of farmland to be had. There's a million people on food stamps. Why can't those people start growing food? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at, I'll give you another example. There are tremendous numbers of government programs. I started a data servicing company in the 90s, and my theory was, you know, rather than pay people with HUD subsidy and welfare to not work, why don't we just send them the work that the agencies need to do? And there's been an explosion in data servicing work, and we're outsourcing it abroad. So, for example, in Florida, the customer service and administrative support contract on the food stamp program is outsourced to JP Morgan Chase in India.
Right.
So if you look at the money at the state level, the pension fund, so we're sending our retirements, we're buying JP Morgan Chase stock, which is financing JP Morgan Chase, setting up this infrastructure. We're paying our tax money to JP Morgan Chase to bail them out whenever they lose money. Then we're giving them our credit to borrow money. If you had the federal credit to borrow money, you'd pay 2% on your credit card. So we're giving them all of our capital to finance their outsourcing to businesses, and then we're giving them a government contract to do those jobs in India when we are paying people to not work in the United States.
Right, right. I agree with that.
So what I'm describing to you is a very expensive system where taxpayers are paying 4 and 5 times. You know, if we move those jobs back to Florida, and, you know, that person would then have a tax-paying job and would be paying taxes to the U.S. government and to Florida, whereas now the people doing those jobs are not paying taxes. So it's a system designed to subsidize a big corporation. It's not economically sound.
Well, you're 100% right. Now, of course, given all the insane deals we have with treaties around the world and the WTO and all that, whenever we even start to talk about acting in our own best interest, the government shuts us down, if not locally, globally. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that there are many things that, can work given that type of a paradigm shift. My fear, and I don't know where you are on this, is that before we'll get to that, and I think one day we will, but we're going to get to a lot more totalitarianism and destruction before we ever turn around to what you're saying.
Well, that's the way it's headed, and I think that the timing is how quickly does that go versus how quickly does a shift in consciousness go.
Yeah.
And it to me, it really comes down to a shift in consciousness, because a lot of the desire to control comes from fear, and a lot of the fear comes from the fragility of the system. And that's not the creation just of the guys at the top. That fragility comes from all of us acting in ways, you know, I don't know if, do you remember my red button story?
Oh, yes. This is a fascinating story, and I don't doubt it for a minute. Go for it.
I was giving a speech in Philadelphia in the summer of 2000. A wonderful group of people, and who have a conference once a year to get together and talk about how they can help our society evolve spiritually. Just the most wonderful people. And a friend of mine who's a natural health practitioner had asked me to give a speech called "How the Money Works on Organized Crime," which then became an article called "Narco Dollars for Beginners." And it's supposed to be a light, entertaining description of how dirty money works, you know, for people who never wanted to know about that. So I'm in the middle of the speech, and I'm describing the fact that the Department of Justice the year before had told a reporter that I was helping with research that the U.S. economy launders $500 billion to $1 trillion a year of all illegal monies. So I said to this wonderful group of people, you know, what would happen if we stop being the global leader in money laundering? And so we had a little conversation. They said, well, you know, the stock market would go down because that money would go to Singapore or Hong Kong or London. We'd have trouble financing the government deficit because we need to borrow vast amounts of money to keep the government going. So I said, okay, well, let's pretend there's a big red button up here on the lectern, and if you push that button, you can stop all hard narcotics trafficking in your city, your town, your state, your country tomorrow, thus offending the people who control not just $500 billion to $1 trillion a year of money laundering, but the accumulated capital thereon. So I said, who here would push the button? And out of 100 people dedicated to evolving our society spiritually, guess how many would push the button? Do you remember?
I don't remember if it was zero or one.
It was one.
Okay.
So I said to the other 99, why would you not push the button? And they said, we don't want our mutual funds to go down in price. We don't want our government checks to stop. We don't want our taxes to go up.
Right, right.
So essentially, as a society, we have looked to government and looked to Wall Street to extract subsidy globally from a wide variety of party, you know, using warfare, using covert operations, to subsidize our way of life.
Sure.
And as long as we've done that, we've been complicit in this, in this process of using force to extract subsidy to keep a way of life going. And frankly, we've reached a point where, you know, our leadership is saying, well, you know, we don't need you to help to do that anymore. You, the baby boomers, have produced this huge wealth from manufacturing and everything else. We've shifted it out of the country, and now, you felt safe because you had all these promises, but we're now pulling the plug on that, and you don't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah. And here we are. Now, you know, you mentioned people talking about people going into farming and things of that nature, and then you get to the food safety bill, and it seems that between Monsanto and the government, the push is on to make sure you cannot, on your own, without their GMO foods, sustain yourself.
Right. It's basically what you're looking at legislatively is in every area of endeavor, they're trying to make it impossible to be self-sustaining as a small operator.
Yes.
So small farm, small business, I mean, whether it's the regulation or the taxes, they're trying to make it just, you know, impossible to function.
Right, right. Independent physicians like we were talking about in the health care bill, or a lot of our listeners are commercial drivers, independent owner-operators.
Right.
You know, we've seen the consolidation because it's much easier to control a handful of banks, especially when you're infusing the capital into them, or a couple of radio chains or what have you, one department store chain, you know, et cetera.
Right.
And so it only goes to follow that it's much easier to control a handful of the mega players in behind closed doors meetings than individuals. The most dangerous
right.
thing to those who want to control us is to think about 50 million individuals. That they can't have.
Well, the thing, though, is, and the reason I think they're overplaying their hand is, you know, at some point you make it so... You keep shrinking the pie. They keep doing things. If you look at where all the job growth, a lot of the income is coming from small business
sure.
and small endeavor. And there are a lot of markets in this country and a lot of products and services that large corporations don't want to provide. So, you know, so we're watching a process that is, designed to destroy the economy. I mean, that's what we've been watching now for 15 years is
yeah.
really, a destruction of the economy. It's intentional, and the question is the end game. If you're going to make it impossible for the economy to function, then what are you going to do with all the people?
Well, and, right, and that gets us to the heart of the matter, and I want to get exactly there. We have Catherine Austin Fitz with us, and what do you do with all the people? And Catherine will walk through her calculations, and what's really, of course, chilling is to find out that she's not alone in her thinking. And if you doubted it before, you won't doubt it when you see all in place to give you mandatory inoculation. So if they don't get you through genetically modified food, what's coming up with swine flu? And, you know, there's a lot of people who've talked about eugenics and a lot of people have talked about population control. But as Catherine is saying, it may be the only thing that works, at least on paper, when you look at economically what's happening globally, and that's where it gets scary, and that's where we'll pick it up. In the meantime, you go to Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com, and in fact, you can read Swine Flu, What I Believe, and a lot of other fascinating things. And, you know, I don't mean to sound so down about it. If we continue the way we're going, we've lost it. That's a given. But if enough people do awaken in time, at the very least, maybe we change the timetable. Maybe we change the entire ballgame. We'll pick it up right there on the Raleigh James Show.
It's the Raleigh James Show. If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show.
And you'll hear more about it from Catherine Austin Fitz. You can go to Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. And if you've been there, maybe you've already read her hypothesis about where the swine flu vaccines are going, and it makes absolute sense to me. So we will get to that, not only from the conspiratorial angle, but more to the point, from economic necessity. Can, given the way things are going, anything turn around without massive depopulation? And is this the way we're going to get it? And are those electronic databases we've just been talking about coming just in time if the goal is to find out whether you have been inoculated? All that and more coming up.
The Raleigh James Show.
I want to mention the Sea Crane Company first, because I get a lot of calls and a lot of email about, hey, the stuff you're talking about, I never hear that from the major media. In fact, just before I went on the air tonight, I was going over some of this with a friend who said, why don't I hear that on television? Almost as if, well, if it's not on television, then it must not be happening. Well, you know better than that. But your frustration and where to hear it, I'll tell you, the answer to that is the Sea Crane catalog. You will find so many ways to hear so many things that major media isn't bothering to broach. And I'll tell you what, if you have a broadband connection to the Internet, like a cable or a DSL modem, you need a Wi-Fi radio. Now, I know you can listen online, and of course you probably do, but there is inherent limitations in sitting in front of that desktop all day or dragging that laptop around, not to mention how to find the over 16,000 streams that are currently online 24 hours. Well, Wi-Fi radio solves all of that because you listen like you do on any AM or FM, only it's Wi-Fi. It's all the online streams. And if you're looking for conspiracies, yeah, if you want to hear this show 24/7 or Alex Jones or Jeff Rentz or the Power Hour, it's all there and more. Maybe you just want to hear your favorite obscure oldies. Yeah, Philly oldies, highlitradio.com. It's still on the air. Or perhaps you want to hear the Beatles in Russian. You think I'm kidding. It's there. I guarantee you. Anything you want amplification on, you can get it on a Wi-Fi radio and use it just like any other radio, wherever you are in the house. Now, there's several from which to choose. Firstly, go to ccradio.com and read all about the concept so you understand what it is. Ccradio.com, the only thing you need to bring to the party is a broadband connection. But there's several radios from which to choose, and the CC Wi-Fi of everything currently made, hands down, is my favorite. For one thing, it will pick up any wireless access point, so whether you're traveling or just have something sluggish at home, you're gonna get a signal. It's also very easy to use, intuitive almost. It's got 99 presets with a remote control and a lot more. On top of that, it's based on the Receiva technology. It's not magic. All Wi-Fi radios work on a web portal, and I'll tell you, the one that you want is Receiva, because that's who has all the stations. But not only that, if you find a stream you want to hear that isn't on your radio, you just go to Receiva.com and they add it. It's that simple. So, ccradio.com. Read about Wi-Fi radio. When it comes to what to pick, get the CC Wi-Fi, and you will hear, in fact, you'll hear everything we're talking about tonight and a lot more, I'm sure. It's ccradio.com. If you prefer to give them a call, they'll be back tomorrow whenever you get up at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. You tell them Raleigh sent you. And I promise next half hour we will take your calls, but I'm not done hogging Catherine Austin Fitz, Solari.com. So here we are. We've got a model, and this model says, the only way it works is if we depopulate. How did you come upon this?
Well, I've served as Assistant Secretary of Housing in the first Bush administration.
Yes.
And in that, my job was to oversee a portfolio of $300 billion of mortgage insurance. And we originated $50 to $100 billion a year. And to do the actuarial analysis on that, Raleigh, you really have to understand not just all the mortgage markets in the U.S., but how they relate to government credit, because so much of government credit and the taxpayer stands behind real estate and mortgage credit. And so it was really my job as the commissioner, my fiduciary responsibility was to understand how all the credit system worked, mm-hmm. and how that related to 300 million Americans. At the time, it was, say, 250 million Americans, and now okay. 300 million. And then when I left the Bush administration, I was very focused on the importance of getting equity flowing around communities if small business was going to stay viable. And so I built a series, I started a company, and we built a series of databases that allowed us to look at the federal budget not just by function, so housing, healthcare, military, but by place, Tulsa, Alabama, you know, Montana, so that I could look at how the economy was working on a place-based basis. And we were hired back, my company was hired on competitive contract to the FHA to help them with portfolio strategy. And so I was basically looking at all the investment in the United States. We had one software tool where you could put in your stock portfolio and it would print out a picture of where your employees were.
Mm-hmm.
So you could relate, you know, where in the world you know, where what were the places you were financing with your money. Anyway, it was our job to understand how to keep the housing programs of the United States government on solid financial ground. Anyway, so that gave me a perspective of looking literally both at the country and the world on a financial picture that would allow me to relate what's happening to a person, their family, their community, with the economy, the whole planet. Because think of a community as a molecule of the global economy, and you know, a person or a family as the atom. And as you know, the whole body can't be healthy unless the atoms and the molecules are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And they're just the building block of the whole thing.
Sure.
And it was my job to kind of be able to look at how the economy really worked and toggle back and forth between the two. And I knew coming out of the Bush administration that it was urgent that we re-engineer the way government money is invested in this country. Is it's designed to centralize control, but not to run things efficiently. And so you find millions of examples where, for example, at HUD we would be spending $250,000 for public housing, but $50,000 would buy and rehab a single-family home in the same four-block area. So we were spending, you know, if we were willing to shift the money, we could have four or five homes for the price of one.
Right.
I mean, it's just the same as paying somebody to not work. At the same time, you're outsourcing that contract to a big corporation. In essence, you're paying double for the work.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it was my business to get into what we had to do. And it was very clear that the boomers had created tremendous wealth, you know, through manufacturing during the 60s through the early 80s. And unless we, if we didn't preserve that money, one of the biggest issues I worked on in the 90s was with a group of pension fund leaders, how do we preserve that wealth and make sure it really works behind the boomers? And,
mm-hmm.
and I was arguing tremendously that we had to shift government money and have government money invested to meet, you know, traditional standards of doing things in a way that was economic instead of political. In other words,
mm-hmm.
we needed to invest the money wisely instead of having fees for our friends.
Right.
Now, what happened at the same time, and there's beautiful descriptions of this. I posted them up on my blog, and they're linked from the article about swine flu by Sir James Goldsmith, who, when GATA and the WTO went forward in the mid-90s, he basically said, look, this is insane. We're going to kill billions of people by industrial agriculture and centralizing control of agriculture and the seed supply worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was saying on a global scale what I was saying on a domestic scale to the U.S., which is if we proceed with this extraordinary kind of centralization, we're going to cause mass poverty, mass starvation. It's absolutely insane. There's
mm-hmm.
a wonderful interview of him in 1994 with Charlie Rose, basically saying, you know, billions of people are going to be destroyed or killed, or, you know, this is madness.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same thing. We're centralizing the economy in a way that can only lead to, from my vantage point, depopulation. Now, we've seen that. We've seen the U.S. go in, for example, in Russia and Eastern Europe in the 90s, and do what Naomi Klein has called shock doctrine, which is basically pull the rug out from under small business and Main Street, you know, basically pull the money out of the pension funds, banks, other things, and literally watch a significant number of people, you know, the average life expectancy drop tremendously, and people just die because of economic warfare.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this has been going on around the planet, and it's been accelerating, and it seems to... be coming to the United States.
And you were in your swine flu article saying your simple calculations guessed we're going to achieve economic sustainability by depopulating the earth down to 500 million people.
Well, what happened, that was a number I came up with, and it was 98 or 99, and, you know, I just started to see, it was as though the world had gone mad starting in the early 90s, and part of it that I was dealing with was we were literally seeing teams of HUD people, they were multi-jurisdictional teams, dropped into neighborhoods, rounding up kids who were just hanging out, accusing them of dealing drugs and stuffing them into prisons. And, of course, all these people were making money on the prison stocks.
Right.
And there was nothing that we were doing that, you know, it was just, you know, sort of what Hitler was doing with the concentration camps. We just had, you know, we just had better PR. And to date, you know, there are no gas chambers, although I think, you know, certainly people have died and are dying and, you know,
yeah.
for a variety of reasons. But anyway, you know, so and it was as though the country had gone mad. And I couldn't figure out what in the world has happened. And as I researched and looked at what was doing, you know, the bubble, it was clear, Raleigh, we needed to pay down our debt if the baby boomers were going to have, you know, a reasonable retirement. And instead we decided to have the mother of all, you know, housing and mortgage bubbles.
Right.
And I watched it, and I sat down and did the numbers of what was happening globally and nationally, and I said, you know, because remember, I was used to working with very big numbers. I don't see how this goes anywhere except for massive depopulation. And, you know, the 500 number was a 500 million was just an intuitive number. You know, I was kind of looking at where everything was going, and I'm used to working with very big numbers. And I said, you know, where this has to go ultimately is a significant reduction in population. And it was funny because, you know, I tell the story in the article. There was a portfolio strategist who was very capable and asked if he could have lunch with me. It wasn't somebody I knew well, but I knew was very capable and was also used to working with such big numbers. And about halfway through the lunch, you know, I kept wondering, okay, what's the real purpose of
right.
this lunch? Finally, he said to me, you know, I don't see how this goes anywhere except for massive depopulation. It doesn't make any sense to me. And he said, you know, I figured they're, you know, my guess is they're planning on depopulating down to about 500 million. And I just looked at him and I said, you know, that's my number. So, it,
yeah.
you know, it was strange. And, you know, we were scared to literally even say it to each other because no one could fathom what we were saying. You know, most people thought the housing bubble gave the appearance of great, you know, financial well-being and liquidity. People thought that, you know, people were making money. They were... their portfolios were up, they were having a great time.
Right.
And what they didn't understand was their portfolios were up on stocks, you know, corporate stocks that were making money from moving their jobs to Asia or basically firing them.
Or the derivatives up on air, up on betting, up on nothing of substance, and meanwhile they'd go use their house as their ATM, and everybody crowing how home ownership rates were their highest ever, forgot to mention that home equity rates were the lowest ever. So
right.
this was the perfect storm, and now we're talking a decade later, and where it's come home to roost, and everything you had said about the FHA and what was going on with mortgages has certainly proved you right. And so here we sit, and next thing you know, they're telling us everybody's going to get a swine flu vaccine, and that had to send a chill down your spine.
Well, from everything I've seen, what sent a chill down my spine was the earlier this year when we had the whole sort of media event of swine flu,
mm-hmm.
you know, starting in Mexico.
Yes.
I saw people who know what you know, Raleigh, and they were completely enthralled by the whole event. You know, it's all they could talk about, all they could read, all they could think about. And, you know, as a media event, as something to scare people as disinformation, it worked beautifully.
Yes.
And I said, uh-oh, you know, this is a real... I've never seen people fall into an entrainment like this. There's something about a plague. You know, it's invisible. You can't see it. It just scares people, and it causes them to become irrational.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, uh-oh, you know, there's a real game going on. And this is of real concern. And then I started to get feedback from, you know, sort of the 9/11 groups. I mean, 9/11 in the emergency preparedness groups in communities
right.
and sheriff's office and other things, that there's a real gearing up of an infrastructure. Now, given what the logistics are, I just don't think that they have the capacity to do a mandatory vaccination this year. I just I can't imagine that they can get there operationally.
Right. We pray to God that's the case, though, as you well know. They've already put complete immunity from any legal action should they inadvertently kill you into place. They don't have the vaccine yet, but they've got the protection. So we
right. And the thing that scares me is I've been told repeatedly by people in the healthcare world, if this thing hasn't been researched and tested for a fairly long period of time, then you can figure out it's going to be a killer.
Yeah.
So you know, the Helsinki Accord has stipulations that you're not supposed to experiment on the population. And to me, what I'm hearing and seeing is something that sounds like an experiment. So,
oh, of course it is.
I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. And my concern is, if you look at kind of how this is falling out, laying out, the different behavior patterns, this is something that will certainly is something that can engage and control the population at the same time that basically the, you know, Congress is going to roll out budget cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and the reality of little stimulus coming to Main Street and $12 trillion going to the banks is going to become very, very clear. So, you know, swine flu can be a lot of things. If you study health in this country, what you realize is the health has deteriorated tremendously. It's not from any one thing. It's from a variety of things, whether it's the food, the water,
right,
chemtrails,
right,
you know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, in my network, and I'm sure in yours, there are plenty of people who have Lyme disease, chronic fatigue, all
sure,
these different things. When you get in and really try and study them and what people have done to heal them, it brings up more questions than answers, and one of the big areas of questions is vaccines.
Absolutely. Now, another thing that I think a lot of people are wondering about, you talk about the stimulus not coming to you and I, and how true. We hear about the huge numbers of foreclosures, and yet when you look at various real estate markets, most of them haven't hit the market yet. What's going on?
I don't know, and I think it's very particular to each market.
Yes.
The banks, you know, my guess is the banks have gotten enough money to keep them floating without foreclosing and trying to get their cash. So the bailout has basically floated them in a way that they don't have to get aggressive there the way they did in 1989.
Interesting.
And because there's no, you know, putting them on the market isn't necessarily going to help. Generally, when you have the government engineer a fraud in real estate and mortgage, what you're watching, though, is a land use, there's a land use strategy.
Yes.
And my guess is in a lot of places that got hit hard, what you're looking to do is move the people out that live there and literally convert that in, you know, in a place like Detroit.
Right.
You know, they're gonna shrink the city and basically, you know, tear down the houses and turn some of those spaces into land.
Right, they've already been saying that. I also wondered whether in some cases it was better for the banks to have it on their books, given what might be coming with bailouts and everything else, than take an absolute loss on reselling a foreclosure.
Right.
But either way, when you see the numbers that they say are foreclosed and you see the numbers that are for sale, for the most part, there's a disconnect there. Now, next thing you mentioned, it depends on place, and boy, does it. And I know you've done a lot of research on that and currently are in Tennessee yourself. But in terms of if people are looking to make moves, where are the best places?
Well, you know, I think in one sense, Raleigh, there's no place that's safe.
Right.
And the question is, if you decide to move to a place because it's safe, you'll make the wrong decision.
Right.
The question is, where's your heart? Where's your desire? Where is it you want to contribute to building a better world? So, you know, we're in a time of change. We're in a time of great uncertainty. And this is a time to really decide who you love and what you love and go do that, go make that happen. Because in fact, you know, the way we're powerful when we're focused on making that contribution that's really in our heart to make. So for example, I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee because I want to be next to my family and I want to be in a farming community. I want to be, you know, I want to have land that's beautiful. And, you know, so there are a couple things here that I love. and I'm here to do something that I love. It's about who I love, and mm-hmm. you know, so you can't choose a place because it's avoiding the negative. The negative's everywhere. You know what? All these problems that we're talking about, they're everywhere. And so, where's the place that you really want to be part of making, you know, making a change, making something different? Because it's going to come down to there are 3,100 counties in the country, and which one of those counties, you know, are we going to turn things around?
Well, when you look at it, there's certain things like where you are, for instance, you've got a long growing season, you've got land you can use to grow, you don't have a huge water problem. There's a number of places across the country where I wonder just if the land is arid or if the growing season's real short or if there's an impending water crisis. And I think as we get into the next decades, we're going to see a water crisis that opposed from thinking that the jackboots are coming quicker. It may be that some places are more sustainable than others just on natural
right.
resources.
Right. Well, it's funny. We had I have a Solaria Circle, which is like an investment club. And the first thing we did when we got together is we did a simulation. We said, okay, we're a family of four. We have $1 million in cash and we're homeless. And so the first thing we did was we picked a place to live and we went through all those issues. What are the criteria? What's important to us, et cetera, et cetera. And we chose North Carolina. As a group, because same thing, long growing season, moderate, you know, it's scalable,
right.
A lot more emphasis on community, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think those things are important, but I also think the most important question is who? Who do you want to be with?
Okay.
Who do you love being with? And you know, one of the reasons I live in Hickory Valley is our town council meets once a month, and you know what they do at the meeting?
Well, hang on a minute. We're going to find out in about 6 minutes from right now. We've got Catherine Austin Fitz. We'll have that question answered and yours, too, if you've got any 610-640-6400.
It's the Raleigh James Show. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH.
Perfume smelling like... Or better yet, 610-640-6400, 610-640-6400. We'll do it to it if you've got questions for Catherine Austin Fitz. And we left you hanging with a question that we will find answers in moments. Catherine talking about moving to Tennessee and the reasons, and we got to the city council meets once a month, and we'll find out why, and a lot more. I think a lot of people right now are thinking, where can I go to escape this? And I agree with Catherine that nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. The question isn't where can you escape it, but where are you likely to build the life that is worth living? But that said, it begs the question with databasing and everything else, regardless of where you are, how do you live under the radar? How do you manage to escape the mandates? I was just reading where Texas has now made it a law that in mandatory evacuation, the police can use force. So that's just one. But every day something comes across my desk which says you can't run and you can't hide. We'll find out if indeed maybe you can. Solari.com, Solari.com is the website.
The Raleigh James Show.
And I'll quickly mention OIDA. You know, when it comes to going to Capitol Hill and pleading your cases, bureaucrats and politicians alike tend to pay attention to the loudest voices. And the loudest voices are those with the most members. It's that simple, representing the most voting Americans. Well, in the case of OIDA, OIDA is a trade organization. It represents your interests if you are a commercial driver. They are the only organization that is exclusively dedicated to the betterment and welfare of the commercial driver. It doesn't matter whether your company or your own independent owner-operator or what you're driving or where you're driving it. If you're driving commercially for a living, it's OIDA that has your back. Talk to anybody who's in the organization, and they will give you a number of reasons. Terrific benefits. They've been known to file lawsuits on your behalf, go to bat for you when you need it most. They've got the discounts. They've got the group plans and so much more, and none of that's why I ask you to join. I'm all about getting OIDA to a point where they got a seat at the table when legislation or regulation is being discussed. Right now, with about 160,000 members, they're in the room, no doubt about it. Their points are heard. They are considered. But there's such a gulf between considered and having the kind of clout that your views must be represented in the final legislation or regulation. And that's what you as a driver need in 2009 more than ever. Only way to make that happen is one member at a time, increasing the membership base to a point where the voice cannot be ignored. There's over 5 million drivers on the road commercially. Hey, just get 20% of those. You got a million member organization, and I guarantee you, they're at the table. So $25 for your first year dues if you mention Raleigh James, 6.8 cents a day. This is a no-brainer. Please join. You can do it by phone at 800-444-5791. That's 800-444-5791. Or you can do it online at oida.com. If you do it online, there's a membership link. It says join or renew. Click on that. A form pops up, and you'll know what to do. Put Raleigh James in the promo code, $25 in the amount you're in. However you do it, please join OIDA. It benefits you and every other commercial driver on the road, and I appreciate it. So we left Catherine Austin Fitz about to tell us about those monthly town meetings. So
you go to, if you want to talk to any of our elected officials in Hickory Valley, just go see them. But you can also go to the town meeting, which, of course, is open. What they all do is they meet, they review the bills, and then they write the checks.
Okay. That's great.
So it's, a lot of internal controls with everybody in the town council having to personally oversee and write the check.
That is terrific. In terms of, though, you're a West Philly girl, aren't you?
I grew up in Philadelphia, that's right.
Yeah,
I grew up in West Philly.
Yeah, so let's face it, West Philly to the Alabama state line, which or the Mississippi state line, this is, you talked about being where your loved ones are. How exactly did that happen?
Well, my grandfather grew up in the county which I now live in.
Okay.
And I grew up in Philadelphia. My father was from the South, and I never got a chance to meet my Southern relatives.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided that I would, after I graduated from business school, ride a bicycle across the country, and I would set the route so I could go and meet all these Southern relatives that I never met. And one of the places I rode through was Hickory Valley, Tennessee, and I got to stay here for a week in 1978 and meet all my farming cousins. You know, I was part of every family in this country, Raleigh, is split between the part of the family that went off to the cities and went to work for banks and corporations, and then, you know, the folks who stayed back on the ranch. So I got to meet all my farming cousins, and I just loved it. And then when I went to Wall Street, had a very successful career. Then I was in Washington, and when I got into litigation with the federal government, I realized, you know, I didn't need to stay in Washington. I could do it from anywhere. And I sat down one night and I drank a bottle of wine and said, okay, if I could live anywhere in the world, because now with the internet you can do,
yes,
you know, I'm an investment advisor and you can work from anywhere. I said, where would I be? And I said, you know, I'd be in Hickory Valley.
Wow.
So I came and I tried it. You know, I didn't know if I'd like it. So I tried it. I just rented a place and then I bought a little place. And I loved it. There's something about going out when things get overwhelming and talking to a cow. The cow knows how to put everything into perspective.
Well, not only that, there are more of them in Hickory Valley than people. Last time I checked,
right,
there was like 136 people in this town.
Well, it's our downtown area, which I'm right across from the gazebo on the town commons, is 152, and then our greater metropolitan area is 1,200, and there are about 26,000 people in the whole county.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny, I went in for a business meeting in Memphis today. Memphis is about an hour and 15 minutes from here. And as I drive, this happens to me every time I drive back from Memphis. You know, you leave the concrete and you come to this beautiful land and beautiful trees, and there are not that many people, and it just completely changes the energy.
Mm.
So I drove in, I drove into my house and I said, thank you, Lord. I love it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
and that there's a real sense of peace and security when you're where you want to be, and
right.
Certainly when you can have, like you say, cows surrounding you and things like that. There's a perceived safety. You know, you say that it doesn't matter where you are, but certainly for your own attitude, it matters tremendously. You know, you want to be able.
I like Tennessee. I haven't had that much interaction with government here, but we have a very high quality of person who goes into work in Tennessee. Tennessee has a big sales tax, and so it's a modest state. People live modestly here compared to other states, and the land is very beautiful. There's a lot of lakes and trees. People have a lot of concrete skills. When I was, you know, living in New York and Washington, you're with people who, I call it now, they talk pretzel talk, because what they're doing is so divorced from the real world, and they've come to talk about the real world in ways that just aren't true. And so, you know, you come to and live in a place like Hickory Valley, and you're living with people, whether they're farmers or truckers or plumbers, but they're doing real things, and they can't afford to talk pretzel talk. They've got to talk English. And so it creates a different culture when you're with people who really know how to do things. And, you know, I love being around people who have real skills, because once the debt bubble pops, we're going to need real skills.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the high sales tax, but, of course, there's no earned income tax in Tennessee.
Right, right.
And how is...
But, it keeps consumption. I think it's moderated consumption here, because people live much more modestly here for the amount of money they have than on the East Coast or the West Coast.
I wonder if...
People live very parsimoniously.
And I wonder if that's sales tax or attitude, because I think that taking on debt is seen as a much bigger responsibility there than maybe on the
right.
East Coast.
Right. It's really funny. When I first got to Hickory Valley, I went to the Hickory Valley Women's Club, my
mm-hmm.
first meeting,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about the floats for the both the Christmas and July 4th parade, and we have these old, really old... we have a wonderful volunteer fire department, so we're talking about putting a banner up on one of the fire trucks for the parade. And my cousin Jane said, she said, Hickory Valley, so far behind, we're ahead.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And that's what it's like. It's funny, if you sit down and you ask one of the people who's all excited about living green and doing green, and you ask them what green is about, what they'll describe is what people here will call old-timey, the old-timey ways.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know? And
absolutely.
It's basically making do with what you have and getting things to stretch and not wasting anything. So yeah. It's a culture that's very appropriate for the time we're coming into.
You're absolutely right, and that's why the Detroits of the world, like you say, they'll be downsized just because the homes won't be rebuilt and things of that, are obvious places not to be for a lot of reasons, I think. But like I say, I would think that if somebody's relocating at this point, increasingly the idea that you'll have sustainable infrastructure, including water and land and a growing season, that's probably going to be critical.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think good farmland and good water... And not too much population is going to be it's going to be a good place to be. I will say this, you know, I grew up in an African American neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and I have spent a lot of time in the African American church community.
Yes.
And in that culture, and you'll find this in the cities, you have these remarkable cultures, remarkable groups of people who have lived with and overcome tremendous adversity together.
Right.
And those are pockets of people who really know how to deal in the kind of situation we're coming into. I mean, they really know how to engage successfully in spiritual warfare. And, you know, they've lived through the war on terror. Remember the T-shirts that came out with a Native American thing? You know, living with the war on terror since 1492.
Right, you're right, yes.
You know, there are a lot of, middle and upper middle class people who are now going to have to learn survival skills that some of those populations, you know, have in spades. So there's some real talent and knowledge in the cities, too. And I think part of, being successful here is building the linkages between the different, you know, different populations have different skills and knowledge, and can we build the linkages? Because a lot of what has kept this going the way it's going is divide and conquer politics.
Of course.
Part of being successful in this environment is overcoming the divide and conquer politics.
Now, I agree with you wholeheartedly. With that in mind, while we'd like to think there'll be a paradigm shift and we can avert a lot of what's coming, assuming that that paradigm shift is not coming, you're uniquely suited with your Bush administration and your FHA work and all that to know what's in store. Where do you see us 2, 5, 10 years from now?
I don't know, because I think the $64,000 question in my mind is what's causing climate change, and what is that process going to be like? Because I think the big question right now is we have a small handful of people centralizing control and sort of governing resources on planet Earth, and what happens 5 to 10 years from now is, do they stay in control or do they lose control?
Yes.
Now, what's interesting is most people want them to not lose control, because they think it would be horribly inconvenient, and don't understand the best thing for all of us is that they lose control.
Right.
So, and I think climate change is going to be a significant factor to deciding which of that it is. So, and I think that's, I've researched it. I'm sure you've researched it. I've tried to figure out what the problems are. You know, I could guess as to where it's coming from, but at the end of the day, that's going to be the big decider.
Well, to me, where we are right now is that it is not a scientific discussion at all. It's an economic discussion. When you look at cap and trade, you're talking about a trillion.
The biggest scam that ever.
Biggest scam, yes, the biggest scam ever. And so, I'm of the school who doesn't believe that climate change is in any way man-made. But regardless of that, what I do know is cap and trade is 100% man-made. It's all about the bankers. It's about a $1 trillion derivative market, and you've got people who will do whatever it takes to pull this off. And so when I think of climate change, I don't think about it from the actual changing of any climate as much as I think about it from the fact that this is probably the biggest change economically. It's a global tax when you get right down to it that we've ever seen. And
right. It's what it's going to do, where this is going, is large corporations are going to be able to tax people for people's estimated resource uses, and corporations can get a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah.
So literally, we're going to see, this gets back to the same trajectory that I think the swine flu is all part of. In other words, industrialized agriculture, chemtrails, vaccines, all these different things all add up to greater expenses, less revenues, lower, weaker immune systems, greater toxicity, and all of that leads, it's think of this as livestock management. It leads to impossible stresses, both economic and physical, which leads to, it leads to a lower life expectancy.
And I agree that that's probably certainly part of the plan, or at the very least a desirable sub-benefit, if not a direct part of the plan. Now, with that in mind, apart from where we're living in terms of how we're living, is it possible to live under the radar of all of this?
Well, I think it's incremental. In one sense, it's impossible to live completely under the radar. But I think there's a lot you can do to stay out of, every time you stay out of a database, you're a little bit more off the radar.
Yeah.
So everything you can do to use cash or coin to barter, everything you can do to not get into a database. Now, my circumstances as such, because I did litigation with the federal government, and, you know, in the process found that it was important to become very visible. You know, I sort of gave up in trying to be off the radar and said, okay, I'm going to be in the center of things.
Yeah.
So I'm not someone who's trying to, you know, I haven't really explored that lifestyle because it's just not one that is now suited to what I do. But I think every time you keep your name out of a database, it's useful.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, I don't have health care insurance,
right.
And I don't have a doctor. Anytime somebody asks me who my doctor is, I say, none.
Right.
On the form.
Right.
So, and that's very, my father was a surgeon, and I've had a lot of people in the healthcare practice in my family, and I know too much.
Right.
So I don't want, in an emergency situation, somebody being able to make decisions for me because they say they're my doctor.
Exactly. No, I agree with that wholeheartedly, and that's going to come into even greater play as we get to Obamacare.
Right. Well, one thing to consider, you know, because now more and more people are going abroad for their checkups and
yes.
for elective surgery.
Yes.
And one thing to think about is, you know, will going abroad for health care be, one, more economic, and two, keep you out of the databases?
Right. Right, absolutely. And then you wonder, at what point will they close that loophole? Because they're hell-bent on making sure that we can't circumnavigate any of the plans. And, you know, so that's a factor, too. But for right now, yes, you absolutely can. All right, Mitchell in Georgia. Welcome, Mitchell.
Hey, Raleigh. How are y'all today?
All righty.
I just, what y'all are saying is great, and, you know, years ago, I went through a divorce, and I used to make a lot of money and just live crazy. And I had to research my life after that to see where all my money was going and how I was killing myself for nothing. And like my grandfather said one time, he said, if you can't afford it today, how are you going to afford it tomorrow? And, you know, you're living for another man.
Right, exactly.
And just making a slave out of yourself and thinking about that. You know, it was hard. I had to change a whole nother lifestyle, like what y'all were talking about tonight. And just, you know, things are going to happen no matter what we think or what we try to do. Things are going to happen just like they've done all through history. It's going to happen here, and all everybody can do is just prepare and, you know, get back to the basics. And what you need and what you want are two different things.
Indeed. All right, Mitchell, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about getting back to basics. And, you know, one of the things that comes up, especially for people who are younger, is they say, all right, what should I be looking at doing? You know, particularly people who maybe they're not in debt or not very much in debt, but they don't have any real equity or savings. What's the best course of action in terms
of
that?
Yeah, there's so many different things you can do. The first thing you need to do is build skills. And every time you can teach yourself a skill of something that you can do for yourself or for you and your neighbors,
mm-hmm.
That will save you from having to spend money for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been planting orchards around my house.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I identify, believe it or not, I'm trying to learn how to grow lemon trees in Tennessee because I grow so many lemons. But the first thing I've done is I've simplified dramatically. So I used to have, you know, when I started the litigation, rally, I had over personal and professional overhead of $1 million a month.
Right.
So, you know, I had to bring that way down. But it took me many years to sell all my possessions. But, you know, whereas before I had 10,000 square feet, I'm down to 1,200 square feet and living much, much more modestly.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, anything you can do to learn skills that you can do for yourself or you can trade with somebody else, or you can, or you can sell those skills, do that. The second thing is start to invest in a home base and an infrastructure which is low maintenance. So, again, anytime you can lower your energy costs by installing geothermal or solar or, you know, whatever. But get your expenses, you know, we're used to going and putting our money in a financial asset, getting a dividend and using that dividend to go to the store and buy food.
Right.
Or go to a utility and buy energy. But anytime we can invest in an infrastructure that deletes the need for that money, the better. So I once had a friend who kept saying, she kept complaining that her stocks were going down, and she also kept complaining that her water bill was going up.
Right.
And I said, this is really easy. Why don't you just sell your stock and, you know, build a well? Now, she was in a place where you could build a well. Not everybody is. But we need to think about sort of getting the large corporations out of our life and paying ourselves or our neighbors to do that thing for us instead of putting our money in a financial asset. So start saving by building the infrastructure you need. And for example, I would tell a young person, it makes sense to learn to go out and build a house. You know, if you learn how to build a house, if your friends learn how to do construction, and you start building together, over time you can build each other houses for half the prices if you had to go out and buy it and hook yourself up to a mortgage that's going to cost you years of your life.
No, great, great advice. And as always, great to talk to you. Solari.com. I hope we can do it again soon.
Absolutely, Rolly. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So Catherine Austin Fitz, Solari.com. And we'll get to Walter in Arizona. He says he's got debt questions. I don't know if I have debt answers. We'll find out. And more coming up.
It's the Rolly James Show.